Your seats. I'd like to call the CTC meeting of April 26th to order. They're not on? Yeah, they're on. So can we call the roll?
Commissioner Alvarado? Commissioner Ferguson?
Here.
Commissioner Chalker?
He's here.
He just walked in.
Commissioner Arndt?
Here.
Commissioner
Barney?
Commissioner Lindsay?
Here.
Commissioner
Tavolini?
Present.
Commissioner
Zarian?
Here.
Chair
Clemente? Present. At this time, we're going to have to adjourn into a closed session. You people are all welcome to stay here. We have to go into a little room down the hall. So we should be back to open the main course of the business at 9:15. Well, we're 10 minutes late. How about 9:20? Thank you.
I'm trying to make up for time.
I'm sure.
Please take your seats.
Nice to talk to you last night.
Could I ask a favor of all of you? We do have some problems with cell phones. It's like a movie theater, so if you could all take a little time and turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate, I'd appreciate it. We've concluded our closed session, and there are no reportable actions to announce. So we'll move on to our welcoming by San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. Mr. Mayor?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Mayor Dave Romero from the City of San Luis Obispo, here to welcome you to our beautiful city. You are outside. You notice that we had another perfect day in paradise today. Crystal clear. We have lots of days like this. So I would hope when you finish your business today that you have an opportunity to spend a little time in San Luis Obispo to enjoy the things we have to offer. If you don't have to be to L.A. or San Francisco very, very quickly, we have to wait for your plane, or you can stay over a while, visit our mission. This is one of Father Sarah's original missions, still an active church. Visit our mission plaza in front of the mission, where we took an old creek ditch that went through the city and made it something that has a one wards. People from Berkeley have come down to see how we did it here, so we're very happy with that. Tonight is a special night. This is Thursday night. We have Farmers Market every Thursday, where we have a three-block party in the whole day. We close off the streets, and lots of people out there. Tonight, this special event is the rib cook-off with 13 different kinds of ribs. I have to go judge those, so it's a really tough job. But if you can stay over, visit our block party in downtown, great food and whatnot. If you can stay over tomorrow, you can visit our award-winning downtown. You can hike on our trails. We have 25 miles of bike trails, 25 miles of hiking trails around. Visit Hearst Castle, Madonna Inn, our Performing Arts Center. We have lots of artwork in the community. We very much enjoy having you here. Please come back. If you have to leave quickly, just make a note in your notebook. We're going to come back for another meeting, or if not, come back and enjoy a long weekend with us. Thank you very much. Welcome to San Luis Obispo.
Thank you, Mayor.
Oh, I was going to introduce the president of our Council of Governments, Jim Patterson.
Thank you, Mayor Romero. Welcome, commissioners and staff to San Luis Obispo. We have certainly a lot to offer in the city of San Luis, but also the county at large. I come bearing gifts. I have for each of you a T-shirt that advertises our bike month, and Carl certainly can relate to that, being a triathlete and coming back here in a couple of weeks to ride in a triathlon up at Lake San Antonio, which is just over the border in Monterey County. We have these for each of you, and I want to thank you for coming and telling you a little bit about San Luis Obispo County. I represent the 5th District, which includes this portion of San Luis Obispo City, but goes up over the hill and includes Atascadero, runs east to Kern County, south to Santa Barbara County. Geographically, it's a large district. San Luis Obispo County has a population of just under a quarter, or just, excuse me, just over a quarter million people. We have 7 incorporated cities and 8 unincorporated communities. We're a rural county of approximately 2 million acres, with less than 5% of that being urbanized. Our major economies are tourism, agriculture, and the public sector, with California Polytechnic State University, Cuesta College, the California Men's Colony, and the Atascadero State Hospital. In terms of transportation,
sure.
We have a commercial airport just south of San Luis Obispo City. Our major highways are US 101, Highway 46 leading east to the Central Valley, and Highway 1 running up the coast. We have the Union Pacific Railroad and the Amtrak passenger rail. Our challenges, like most communities in California, are increasing congestion on major highways and interchanges and our regionally significant routes. We have increasing commute times, insufficient funding. You've heard all of this before, I'm sure. Skyrocketing costs and complex, slow, and costly project development process, which I know Will Kempton and his staff is working very hard to alleviate. Our goals in San Luis Obispo are multimodal transportation system improvements, hence our efforts to shift gears and get into more transit-oriented and other modes of transportation. We want to improve our transportation and land use relationship. We need to improve our job housing balance, provide competitive job opportunities, maintain our beautiful, healthy environment that you've all been able to enjoy, and provide good schools and community facilities. Part of what we're doing here and have been engaged in the last year is our regional blueprinting process. We have had, we call that Community 2050, and we've had a number of community meetings throughout the county to talk about regional planning and regional development, the need to partner and to work together. We've mapped alternatives. We've used interacting polling processes to get a feel for what the community needs and wants are. We've ranked and summarized our concepts and evaluated our next steps. To move this forward, we've planned 2 regional smart growth leadership summits where our target audience is elected officials, planning commissioners, city managers, public work and planning directors, as well as people from the business community to talk about smart growth and the need to partner and work together. We've got some of these scheduled. As you can see, we've divided the county into 2 regions, a coastal region as well as an inland region, with the summit of the 2 coming in June. To draw people to these events, we've brought in keynote speakers. The former governor of Maryland, Paris Glendening, and he is the president of the Smart Growth Leadership Institute. And also Stefanos Palazoides will be coming to speak. He is an architect and co-founder of the Congress for New Urbanism. So I want to emphasize that we are moving forward in the spirit of partnerships and cooperation. We want to work with you to meet the challenges that we face. Thank you all for being here, and I'll pass the baton to SLOCOG's Executive Director, Rhonda Carley.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. I wanted to give you a little bit of context into the transportation planning and programming process in San Luis Obispo, some of the major projects that we're working on. In our region, our main spine is Highway 101. And with 101, we conducted a major investment study, which really became a blueprint of how we would start proceeding with planning. We took that back in 1990, and we integrated that into our regional transportation plan program. We've completed highway corridor and special studies on every single highway and every single one of our regionally significant routes. We know where we need to go in the future. We've looked at all modes of transportation and have adopted plans that have all been integrated into our regional transportation plan. We are now monitoring our systems improvement as being proposed by Caltrans and the CTC staff also, in terms of trying to get a better handling of what we're doing. So we've been monitoring and trying to get feedback, taking that information and learning from it and trying to improve what we have. Our major highway projects, as I mentioned, we've completed studies on every single highway in our county, major corridor studies on most of the major highways. And Highway 101, we've completed specific projects and studies in almost every interchange. We're focusing in on operational improvements. How can we make the existing system as efficient as possible? We don't want to focus on just six-laning a particular facility and marching forward, expending all of our funds on that one type of project. We're looking at the entire system. How can we make that system better? On Highway 46, major east-west corridor, we're working in concert with Caltrans in partnership and with Kern County COG to enhance the 46 east-west connections. We thank you very much for the funding you've provided on the 46 project. On our other east-west connectors, 166, we've had safety task forces between Santa Barbara County, our county, Caltrans. Caltrans has come up with a whole series of improvements that they funded, as well as our agency in terms of providing passing lanes and additional channelization. We've looked at Highway 227, an alternative route to 101, and provided funding for that. And Highway 1 we've adopted and was able to secure it as a National Scenic Byway. We're now trying to enhance the National Scenic Byway components of that program. If the next slide basically talks about our foundation, as I mentioned, has been the major investment study in our regional transportation plan. We've recognized the need to expand 101 to six lanes, and we've also recognized that we take all the funding we have. So through the major investment study, we've adopted a comprehensive effort to improve all parallel and alternate routes on the local systems, to expand all modes of transportation, public transit, intercity rail, try and do what we can to reduce the demand by park and ride lots and by ride sharing, trying to get people off the peak hour, expanding our bicycle and pedestrian network, and improving then the highway operations first, getting all that completed, making certain that all the interchanges can accommodate a future facility, and only then would we be looking at a major expansion of 101. As I mentioned, we've started to really focus on multimodals. We now have a bicycle network that's almost 200 miles of Class 1 and Class 2 bike lanes throughout our entire region. We have a public transit system that connects every single community in our region and goes south into Santa Barbara County into the city of Santa Maria. So we have a very good regional system. We've developed and we're expanding our park and ride lots. We're working closely with our counterparts around the state and the Division of Rail and Caltrans to try and expand rail services throughout our region and going northbound to San Francisco, hopefully long-term, a new San Francisco to L.A. train. On Highway 101, we mentioned this somewhat yesterday about operational improvements. And what you have before you is a whole series of operational improvements, auxiliary lanes that we're trying to focus on. Again, we want to squeeze as much efficiency as we can out of the system. What you see in the green are those that have been funded by our RTIP project two cycles ago. In the yellow, there are projects that we now have partially funded under our Regional Transportation Improvement Program, and we're seeking ITIP money, as we mentioned yesterday as well. And what you see is we've been forced just because of money to try and phase these projects in, and we'd like to try and get these all going as much as we can because that will help improve this entire system. We've also talked there about Willow Road Interchange that we had requested funding under our RTIP and then the Santa Maria River Bridge. So next slide. Santa Maria River Bridge, we spoke to yesterday, $58 million project. We're trying to get final engineering on that project. We again hope, possibly, in the event that any of the CMA projects drop, that this one project, which was a candidate, CMA, may be able to compete if we're ready. And we're continuing to stress, trying to get that complete and ready to go to construction, and then we'll see where we go. On the 46 East Corridor, again, major east-west corridor, we have almost several hundred million dollars invested in that corridor now with your assistance and the assistance of our Congress member as well. We now have the union segment that is funded and will be ready to list in June of 07. So it's going to be coming before you very soon, with construction finally to begin in October 07. The environmental is complete all the way out to the county line. So we finally was able to secure that. Again, thank you for the CMIA money, $67 million, which funds that centerpiece. And the remaining portions is some of the complex issues that we'll be wrestling with in the future. One of the key bottlenecks in 46, however, happens to be in the city of Paso Robles, and it's right where it's connected with Highway 101. And this is on Friday nights. It backs up almost a mile and a half to 2 miles in some cases. So we put our RTIP money and to try and make an operational improvement, restriping and putting in an additional auxiliary lane to try and provide relief for at this time. Long-term, we'll be looking at a new interchange improvement. Next slide. Going further south, 41-101 interchange, funded project. You'll be voting on this today. So we're really pleased to finally get this one moving. Our current efforts and accomplishments, we now have interchanges. All the interchanges that have been built in our county since 1985 can accommodate a future six-lane, a future six-lane with HOVs. However, we're planning everything so that there's no throwaway. Any auxiliary lanes is all being planned to accommodate that future six-lane, again, since 1985. We have major interchange studies underway throughout our entire system. We have highway improvement plans and studies completed throughout our entire system. We are focusing on these Highway 101 operational improvements, first in South County, expanding north into San Luis Obispo, and we're just now working with Caltrans to start those up in our North County. So, again, we'll continue to focus on all these operation improvements with our overall goal, squeeze as much efficiency as we can out of this existing system. And we can't do that if we just focus on the highways. We have a lot of examples all around the state that if everything's focused and funneled onto the highways crash. We've recognized that, and we've been working with our local jurisdictions also to expand the frontage roads, expand and enhance our alternative route so we can disperse some of that traffic. We're continuing to work on ride-sharing and van pools, and we've, as I mentioned, significantly expanded public transit, and we're continuing to attempt to do so. And with your assistance, we'll be continuing to work on intercity rail as well. That concludes our presentation. Thank you very much. We certainly appreciate having that opportunity to present it to you and having you here in our county. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ron. And thank you and the sponsors last night for that wonderful reception that you put on for us. We really appreciate it. Any other questions? Okay. I missed one item from yesterday. It was item number 4, the meetings for compensation.
Yeah, we need an action.
Right. So.
Motion for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now we'll move on to the draft fund estimate assumptions. I'm going to start with Mitch. The Mitch and Norma Show.
Yep. Good morning, Commissioners. This is the draft fund estimate assumptions. As you know, the fund estimate is used to determine capacity for the STIP and also the SHOP. pursuant to statute, Caltrans is presenting draft fund estimate assumptions. The commission will adopt these assumptions in June, and the adopted assumptions will be the basis for the draft fund estimate presented in, to the commission in July. Norma Ortega will be presenting this item for Caltrans and going over some of the key assumptions.
Well, can you give us the highlights?
There are, I think, four key assumptions that Norma will be talking, she'll be talking about more, but I think there are four key ones that we outline in the book item. One is a change in the format of the state highway account, really to get to the idea that the state highway account and federal trust fund can no longer meet all the shop needs. And I think this is something that, that will show that a little clearer at the bottom line of the state highway account and federal trust fund fund estimate. The second key assumption is for federal obligation authority. The federal trust fund, federal highway trust fund, according to some projections, will not be able to maintain the current level of disbursements. So there's a tremendous unknown about how that will impact the amount of obligational authority the state will get. The assumption that is the department is proposing is a 1.8% increase based on the level that was received in 6.7. That's consistent with the rate that gas consumption is growing, but there's a considerable risk with that. The third key assumption is PTA spillover. As you know, spillover has been a volatile revenue source. The department is proposing a spillover, which is roughly $3 billion over the fund estimate period, I think a little bit less. It's slightly more conservative than some of the other assumptions of spillover revenue, and we'll probably get some more guidance when the budget comes out and trailer bill. But there is risk in that revenue source. The fourth assumption that I would like to highlight is the home to schools, which is proposed as an expenditure in the PTA by the administration. That's one of the assumptions that will likely have a tremendous future impact if it's approved. The administration is proposing $600 million. They're suggesting that if it's enacted, that will become the general fund will fund some of that in the future if it's too much of an impact on PTA, but there is nothing in statute that would require that. And so again, that's roughly $3 billion. Those are some of the key assumptions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Norma.
Good morning, commissioners. You have, I think, a copy of the draft fund estimate assumptions, 30-something pages worth of detailed assumptions. Today, I'm just going to highlight a few of the items for you. And this thing here tells me I have 3 minutes, so I'm going to run through it really fast. Just kidding. As Mitch mentioned, the fund estimate establishes the new programming capacity for the STIP for the next 5 years. The base year is the 7-8 budget, and it runs through 2012-13. In the past, the STIP has had multiple funding sources that have been included in the fund estimate, state highway account, PTA, TIF, TDIF, and bonds. However, the 2008 fund estimate is going to be limited to very little SHA funding, PTA, and TIF. The TDIF and the bonds were one time and should have been programmed by the time we get to the 2008. Quickly moving on, the first step in developing the fund estimate is the adoption of the methodology and the assumptions. Statutes provide some guidance for these assumptions. Government Code Section 14.525 requires that revenue assumptions be based on existing law. And Streets and Highways Code Section 163A through E outlines the priority of transportation expenditure, starting with the administration of the department, maintenance and operations, rehabilitation of the state highway system, local assistance, and then any remaining amount for STIP. As Mitch mentioned, one of the changes that we want to discuss from prior fund estimates is the look of the state highway account. The focus in the past had been to focus this on STIP programming capacity, but in fact, the state, the shop has, this is the only funding source for the shop. And over the past few cycles, we have seen very limited amounts of SHA funding available for STIP. With the revenues not keeping pace with the needs, the shop is significantly underfunded, and the change this change will allow us to focus on the cash available for shop capacity.
Norma, could I ask you a question? My understanding that the fund estimate in its own right is the way we guesstimate revenue. You know, how we're going to gather up the resources and say we have X things available. What you just mentioned is a way that we're going to expend revenue, be it by shop or by STIP, and there may be a tweaking or a changing of what you're proposing. I understand that. I don't understand why that has an impact on how we gather revenue. Actually creating the estimate itself. It's how we would expend it, but not how we would gather it. Or am I missing something?
No. The process is still going to remain pretty much the same. It's just a presentation of how the information would be laid out. The revenue assumptions would be the same regardless of whether we did it the prior way or this way, or focused it on STIP versus shop capacity.
Commissioner, here's what's important about this distinction. Previously, the fund estimate would demonstrate programming capacity for the STIP, the bottom of the pachinko machine. We're now in a situation, this is the second fund estimate in which we have this situation, where for all intents and purposes, the fund estimate is irrelevant to programming capacity. I mean, the amount of revenue is not sufficient to provide any programming capacity for the STIP from traditional sources, and it's barely keeping pace. I mean, it's 50 cents on the dollar for the shop. What's important about this is...
That's not keeping pace.
Right. we, by statute, have to review a fund estimate. So we're going through the exercise, the motions, if you will, and the STIP is entirely dependent upon Proposition 42, and the shop is twisting. So... One of the reasons we keep hammering on this point is so that we can go across the street and say, guys, you know, you're asking us to undertake an exercise, and for all intents and purposes, it's an exercise in futility. And notwithstanding the infusion of Prop 1B dollars, this discussion about the fund estimate really underscores how challenged transportation is on its basic financial fundamentals. And so you're adopting this fund estimate in August with some of these assumptions allows us and Will and me to go across the street, the legislature, and say, guys, this is the situation. This is what the next 5 years look like, and this is what we can afford to do based on these revenue assumptions. So, Kirk, you're right. It's about how we generate the revenue. But it also has a big impact on what we can expend it on. And by being able to use the document as an educational tool to say, this is what we cannot do.
So
brings that point
we're stating on. What we've always done just in a different manner.
Correct. And I think on a moving forward basis, we are likely to, unless the situation dramatically improves, the fund estimate in the future will be a fund estimate for all programming capacity. That's the other distinction here, is that it also allows us to size up what we think the shop level can be. And the fund estimate also talks about the revenue assumptions associated with Prop 42, TIF dollars. So now it's in essence... We're no longer talking about one programming exercise, the STIP. We're now talking about STIP, SHOP, and, you know, if we wound up with other, and frankly, Prop 1B dollars. So that's the other subtle distinction here, is that by adopting a fund estimate in this year ahead of what we're going to do from a programming standpoint next year, we have to pay attention to these assumptions because they tie into the capacity that's available to make those programming decisions. And there's some subtle distinctions.
John. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make one statement. I have a very brief question at the end. On this subject, it just happened to be timely. I don't know if anyone saw yesterday's Wall Street Journal. There happens to be an article here entitled "Fuel-Efficient Cars Dent States' Road Budgets," talking about all the states and how they derive their revenue sources from gasoline taxes. California, far and away, is the number one state in this country in terms of its gasoline usage, as shown on this chart. And it's a situation that in our revenue sources going forward for maintenance and operation of the highway system is only going to become worse, not better. So the way we're doing this, I think, is correct, although I had some qualms about it at first to understand it. But there's no point in calculating a STIP capacity because it's not going to be any money for the STIP. My question, Norma, is if for reference, if you can just give us what the expected needs are in the shop, roughly, and what you expect this revenue number would be.
We do know that when we get to the bottom of this, the shop capacity or the cash available for shop capacity is going to be significantly less than what our needs are. And I don't have the exact number on the shop needs, but they're significant.
And Commissioner Chalker, we were in a meeting yesterday, so we didn't have an opportunity to see the Wall Street Journal.
And that's why I thought I would bring the world to your doorstep.
All right, moving right along. Go ahead, Norma.
One comment here. While the commission will not be programming much out of the state highway account except for, the transportation enhancement, there will continue to be federal funds on STIP projects, and primarily that's regions are programming more of their Savennit federal dollars, CMAQ and RSTP, on projects. STIP projects are made up of a whole lot of different funding sources. So the commission may not have a programming exercise related to state highway account or limited, but there still will be federal funds on these projects. I wanted to highlight a few of the key policy items for you. The first is a Proposition 42 loan repayment. The balance owed at the end of March 07 is about $1 billion. And issuance of the tribal gaming bonds has continued to be delayed. The governor's budget has proposed an annual repayment of about $100 million for 6-7 and 7-8. And so we have laid out four assumptions for the commission to consider. We are recommending Option A, which assumes that pre-Proposition 42 loans will be repaid from the annual tribal gaming compact revenues of $100 million and the distribution that's laid out there. The second item is the federal revenues. Federal dollars represent about 40% to 50% of the resources in the state highway account. And as Mitch mentioned, the Federal Highway Trust Fund is in some serious issues. That does not mean that funding is going to completely go away, but it is challenging to see whether the funds will increase. In the past, we've made some assumptions that the federal revenues will continue to grow significantly, and that has been that has not proven to be the case in the last few years. We're recommending escalating the amount of received in OA of 6-7 at a rate of 1.8, and that's consistent with the projected growth rate for the fuel excise tax revenues, resulting in about $15.8 billion in federal funds over the fund estimate period. Garvey, bond financing. This is used as a financing tool. It's not a revenue source, but it's a good tool to advance critical transportation projects sooner than traditional funding mechanisms. There's certainly some room for discussion on the Garveys for major shop rehab or bridge projects that are looming, but we really have to take the time to analyze what the impact of the debt service would be on the longer term. We have a number of mandates that are challenging the shop, such as stormwater, ADA, ER, emergency relief that pops up, and we'll need to do an analysis on this particular item to determine when it makes sense to use Garvey for projects. The final item is the PTA spillover revenues. It's been an unpredictable source of funds to the PTA. The assumptions are tied to the risk of the STIP becoming over or under programmed, and we are recommending option A, which assumes revenue spillovers will occur throughout the fund estimate period consistent with existing law.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Norma, under the fund estimate item, loan repayments, under the bullet number one, it says pre-proposition 42 loan repayment of to SHN PTA were assumed under the tribal gaming game bonds proceeds of $1 billion, which did not materialize. Why did it not materialize? The money from the tribal gaming bond.
Well, the statutes allowed for or recommended bonding for these funds, and that issue has been tied up in litigation. So in the meantime, there has been revenue collected from those tribal compacts, and it's been roughly about a little over $100 million a year. And the governor did an early repayment of about $150 million in 5-6, and then in the budget for 7-8 is proposing $100 million for 6-7 and 7-8.
But the assumption was $1 billion. There's a difference between $100 million and $1 billion. What happens?
Well, that's one of the items, whether in the fund estimate we assume that the bonds are going to be sold and the funds would be available, or do we assume that we're going to be collecting $100 million a year until the loan is fully repaid.
But the money's going to come.
We hope so. Yes.
How could it be an assumption, and how could we even plan ahead when we don't know the money will come?
Can I make a comment here? My understanding, because we were involved in this whole thing, there was an agreement that certain Indian tribes, through the compact, would help repay Proposition 42 funding by putting $1 billion up. And the assumption was that we were going to be able to bond that money, knowing that it was coming in, and get the money all up front. They're not paying it up front. They're paying about $100 million a year. But another Indian tribe filed a lawsuit because they got a problem with it, and it's been held up in litigation. It did not hold up the money coming in, but it held up our ability to bond. So instead of being able to just spend all the billion up front and get all of our money repaid from Prop 42, we're getting it pay-as-you-go because the money's still coming in. The Indians, tribes that had made the agreement, are keeping to their agreement, as far as I know, and are still putting the money in. We're just going to spend it as we get it instead of bonding against it.
My question was, the money will come.
Yeah, the money is coming and will continue to come. Now, can I have a question? I have a short memory span, too.
Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I'd rather not be microphoned.
Now I'm on record for the whole world. On the Garvey bond, you said you assume no additional capacity from Garvey bond funding, Garvey bonding. When you, just so I'm clear what that means, does that mean we're not going to do any more Garvey bonds, or we're not going to indebt ourselves any further percentage with Garvey bonds than we already are?
No, the point here is that we are not setting aside in our numbers, when we actually run the numbers and saying we're going to bond $300 or $400 million. It does not stop the commission from making that recommendation in the future, but we get down to the bottom line. We don't automatically say we're going to bond $1 billion worth and the debt service is going to be this much, because then the capacity would be lower. It does not preclude the commission from making that decision later.
In fact, the department is going to give us a presentation in July, Jim, to go over that.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Lindsay, did you have a question?
Norma, there's not, and maybe by not having it identified as an assumption, the assumption is no. There is no place that I find in here that mentions private sector dollars. And with all the discussion over the last 2 or 3 years of how do we get the private sector to invest in our infrastructure needs, we may be in an arena whereby, in the goods movement arena particularly, that we might get some private sector investment. And I just wonder if that's part of the assumption or that's just absolutely left off the page in total, or it ought to be part of the thought process. And I mean, 5 years is a long time, and I would hope that in a five-year span that we can figure out ways to bring in new money.
We have not factored that type of item into the fund estimate in the past, and I think it'd be difficult to determine how much, because it will then impact the amount that's available for programming capacity. Certainly, we can have a lot more discussion on that, whether it makes sense.
We have to develop the fund estimate according to existing statute, and we do not have existing statute that permits it, number one. Number two, anticipating that revenue or estimating that revenue will clearly be a challenge. And even if we did have statute, in all likelihood it would be targeted to a set number of projects with a set number of dollars for all intents and purposes. So it's helpful, but remember, this is to anticipate how much capital resources will be available. There's, I think what we're getting to, based on the questions, is that notwithstanding the estimate, we're going to charge ahead and do a variety of things because we have to. And we've got limited dollars, and so the limited dollars doesn't mean we can't do something. It just means, okay, we got to do things differently.
My concern, John, is twofold. I understand the statute piece to this. If you have a container fee, mm-hmm. going to put money into a pot till it's defined, we don't know what pot or right. how. If you were to have federal tax credits for goods movement corridors, different conglomerates of people that might come to the party, the issue that I've got is that if somewhere it's not on the page, it gets lost, right? And I would hate that and I understand we're trying to build a budget on what we assume to be our revenue with pretty solid assumptions. But I'd just like it on the page that it's something that we can continue to talk about. And as those laws pass or those partnerships are put together, that they, in fact, can get factored in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, one of the challenges we have with a fund estimate is we do it every other year. And the day after you approve it, it's obsolete because there's so many other factors that occur in real time that we have to play to. And so I think we would like to make this a document, an approach that is ongoing and tie what we expect revenues to be to our actions, so that it's not something you adopt in August and then we forget about it until the August of 2 years later. And Kirk, that goes to your point, that we have to be ready, willing, and able when revenue sources materialize to take advantage of them. And we don't have an easy answer for how to do that in real time yet. We're going through this exercise, but I think it's an exercise that is less and less fruitful and rewarding, and we have to try to figure out what's next.
You know, if we say it has to be in statute, what would occur if a private sector entity arrived on the scene and said, I'm going to build a toll road from point A to point B, it's going to change your demands, it's going to generate dollars that I'm going to share with a state, there would be no statute for that. I mean, that would just be a memorandum of understanding or a contract between the state. How would any of that ever arrive here?
You'd still have to have legislation to allow that to happen.
Would you?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's the whole point. The fund estimate, is really kind of like, I look at it as a baseline. You may not like what you see there, but it is what it is. It's not to preclude us later this summer to say, hey, we're going to do a big Garvey bond. But those aren't the facts that Norma and the staff can work after. I think it just really shows, right now, it shows the deficiency in funding in total for transportation. I heard some rumor the other day that I guess the public-private thing isn't flying very far in the legislature, so we may lose that ability to do it. It's really up to those guys across the street to tell us what sources we can go after for financing, and that may not be one of them. Commissioner Bergeson?
Yeah, not only the financing, but it's the timing, because the May revise will be coming out very shortly, and it seems that the information could be substantially changed. The assumptions could change rather dramatically, mm-hmm. as the budget trailer bills will probably contain a lot of the authorizations on how we're going to be able to allocate money. And so that's, you know, this seems to be, you know, it's simply a statement as such rather than having any kind of actual data that really could be used as far as how we're going to leverage funds or how they how the STIP would go forward after these assumptions are made known.
Okay, Norma, you want to finish this uplifting report?
Yeah, the next item is exactly the issues that Commissioner Bergeson raised. The governor's 7-8 proposed budget has some significant items that could impact the fund estimate. And the three items, and there's been a lot of discussion on this, is the state transit assistance transfer, the Section 183 transfer, and the future funding of the home to school. All of those have significant impact on the base year. But in addition to that, the commission will have to make some assumptions on how it would play out in future years. And our recommendation, if we move on to the next slide, is that the timing here, we're expected to adopt the assumptions in June. However, if the budget is still up in the air, we really are going to need to delay the assumption or the adoption of the budget, or excuse me, of the fund estimate until the budget is adopted, because there's significant impacts in the governor's budget that would impact the fund estimate. So right now the schedule is we would come back for final adoption of the assumptions in June. In July, we would actually have the numbers and you would know what the capacity is, and there would be discussion with the final adoption in August of 2007.
Okay. Any additional questions for Norma? Commissioner Chalker?
I'll just be brief, but I don't know how many of you have seen this giant flow chart that was produced by Norma and staff and others, and I just want to give them a real pat on the back. And this is probably the most comprehensive and accurate flow chart for funding that I have seen that clearly lays out where it comes from and where it goes. And just the short time I've been on the commission, and I found it extremely helpful, and I want to give a thank you to everyone who took the time to put this
Thank you very much.
Together.
My staff worked very hard on that, and one of the things that it does demonstrate is that transportation financing is very complicated.
Yes, right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Norma. We're going to move on to the RTP guidelines. John Barna?
Actually, Commissioners, in the interest of time to get us back on track, let's take 15, 16, and 17 in one fell swoop. On the RTP guidelines, we are in the process of trying to put together an initial meeting and then process to comport with the request by Senator Parada that we look at revising the RTP guidelines to incorporate emission reduction AB 32 issues as well as blueprint planning. And you heard from SLOCOG, this county's blueprint approach. We don't have anything significant to report other than we are talking about it. We're trying to get a meeting together in May and initiate a process. Just so that you're aware, we will be folding in initially the RTP update that needs to occur relative to Safety Lou, at least in a conversation, and then. Moving on to probably the environmental issues. What's important for you all to understand about this effort is that increasingly emission reduction issues are taking have front burner status in Sacramento as they apply to Proposition 1B. All of the programs in Prop 1B, it's particularly relevant to the Trade Corridor Improvement Fund. And there are a lot of questions about what are we, the Commission, doing about incorporating emission reduction factors into the STIP. So we've said, look, we have to deal with this on a comprehensive basis, and we have to deal with it at the building block basis of what we do, which is the regional transportation plan. Shifting to the corridor mobility improvement account agreements and the delivery council, the director and I do not have contracts to share with you. Let me be blunt. Our suspicions have been confirmed that much of the information we received and that you used to vote on the CMIA has shifted. And there's no point in trying to say why other than, do you have the chart? This chart shows you, if it's got color on it, that means the information has changed.
Turn it around.
So the video guy can get it.
There you go. If it's got color, the information has changed. So between February 28th and March 28th, a full month, things have shifted enough that we still have a $4.5 billion program. We just don't know what it buys yet.
Wow.
Can you give me a little bit of an idea what sort of changes you're dealing with? I mean, just nothing real long. Just give me an idea what's happening here.
We have some shifts in scope. We have a lot of shifts in schedule. I'm not going to speak for Will, but, you know, I saw some flow charts that showed right away being completed before design is finished. We have right away being completed before environmental is finished. And frankly, you know, the submittals we got on whole were C work. There were some regions that had A work, and that brought up some regions that had F work. But you know what? The information now is an F.
You know, John, I think we're pretty explicit as we made those awards that if the system is gamed and you're not going to be able to do what you said you're going to do, that this commission had a responsibility to make some tough decisions. And I would suggest that we make those sooner than later.
We will start making them in June.
You know, I mean, there's no reason to wait around and hope the world gets better. If you fell off the cliff, you fell off the cliff.
And so Will and I will be part of a process between now and the June meeting to get a baseline for the program.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted, I agree totally with your executive director. I refused to sign this information when it was brought to me initially because of the discrepancies. And as the chart that Stephen displayed shows, there are substantial differences in information previously provided. But the good news is that we're on top of this at this point. I think that is a really significant accomplishment in terms of our program management efforts. So rather than get a project programmed and go through the process and come to you for an allocation and then have to come back for a cost increase or scope adjustments or whatever, we are at the programmatic phase and identifying these discrepancies. And so I think there is some, I always try to look for the positive in things, and I think there is some good news in all of this that we are at a point where we can identify these problems early on. That doesn't dismiss or reduce the significance of the problem. I'm quite disappointed in the differential information that we've received, but as your executive director indicates, between now and June, we'll be working not only with our districts but our partners to clarify that and bring this all back in a package that we can hopefully present to you and need to sign as the law requires.
Yeah,
we disappointed $6.8 billion worth of submittals. Should they be warming up in the bullpen?
Not yet. I mean, it's conceivable, but we have a commitment to make the 55 projects you've agreed to invest in work. I think the message that we're trying to convey here, and to be real clear and direct, is for both the department and regional agencies, this is a program we take really seriously, and it is our job to make these decisions. And if the information ain't there and you can't convince us, then you put us in a position where we have to recommend to these commissioners that you're not on the up and up, the information isn't there, and you may not be a worthwhile investment. You may not be investment grade.
John, let me, you know, you made the comment that it's our job to get these to work. I'm not so sure I would agree with that assumption. It is their job to deliver what they said they're going to deliver. If they can't deliver what they said they're going to deliver, you know, certainly this commissioner has a problem. It's not our job to lead them by the hand. They said, I can build it. We said, here's the okay. They got to deliver the mail.
Agreed.
Mr. Chair, I understand we're talking about these things. Thank you. But I don't know what the consequences are to these applicants that are not giving us the correct information. I'm sitting here, but I don't know what's going to happen and what's the penalty, what's going to happen to the project, and how soon will they find out, and how soon will we find out?
Well, we're going to come back in June. You all made decisions based on some criteria. We said that the projects need to be awarded by June 30th of 2011. We've got some situations where that's not the case, and you'll have to make reaffirm what you want to do with some of these projects. You have said yes based on some scope and cost information that's shifting. And Commissioner, essentially, when we come back in June, you will have to reaffirm the decisions you made in February.
So do I understand you correctly that between now and June you will be exploring the problems that we have today, and mm-hmm. that you will come back to us and say this is black and this is white, and we make that decision whether we move on with them or whether we make changes?
Yes.
John, have you, since this is coming as, thank you, Chairman Gilmetti, since this obviously is coming as a surprise to many, if not all of us on the commission this morning, when will we be notifying those 55 project sponsors of the concerns we have so that they can get back to you?
Well, we will be scheduling sessions with each of the project sponsors and going through each project. And we're going to be doing that probably starting next week.
Great. So we're going to be notifying any one of those 55 that has color on that chart within the next week that we have concerns so that you can start scheduling those meetings?
My understanding is the department has already reached out, and we're in the process of trying to figure out days where we can sit around in a video conference room and go through them.
Right. The discussion is already underway with the regional partners and with the districts, and the dates for the review that Director Barna is talking about are being developed. So this is an ongoing process.
Right.
You know, it's like the kid coming home and his parents saying, "How did you get an F on your report card?" And he goes, "I don't know how it happened." You know, everyone in this room knows what their submittal was like. I don't think there's any surprises out there. Everyone who submitted one knows where the deficiencies are. And it's a function of getting together with the department and our staff and making them right and then reporting back to us in June.
Thank you.
Commissioner Arp?
Yes. Yesterday I was the bad cop, and I'll be a little bit of a good cop today. I think one thing we do recognize is the compressed time frame that everyone has been under to get this done, and so that may be a reason for some of the colors on all that spreadsheet, and I think people are trying to comply. But this is, I think we all have to recognize, this is a compressed course. If you want to look at it in terms of a college course, you've got to get this thing done faster than you've been able to do it in the past, and we're all under that. We all have the accountability, including this commission, so we just got to get it done. But I do have one question that goes back to the one of your earlier parts of your report, John, and that is when other elements that start to enter into the expenditure of the bond, such as AB 32 or other legislation that will have a financial impact, how is that going to factor into these projects, which are already trying to, like, you know, get down through the pipeline?
We one of the reasons that we need to get the baseline figured out and have the program settled down is so that we can, in conversation with the legislature, point out that we already have made commitments ahead of what is going to occur in statute relative to emission reduction, and we have to argue for essentially exempting these projects from those further statutes, because it's unclear where the dollars are going to come from. They're not, from our standpoint, they don't come from the bond proceeds, and they're going to be borne then on the back of the project sponsors, and we think that these are projects that are well known. They've been scoped. Some are through environmental or almost done, and even those that would be initiating environmental over the next couple of years, they've been viewed and developed without consideration of the full impact of emission reduction, and we need to be able to argue that they are exempt or grandfathered or try to figure out another way to deal with it. And this, in part, goes to the Delivery Council issue. You heard yesterday from Lisa Reinheimer that we're now starting the conversation with the RTPA group on their representative. The corridor mobility plans that we've asked for, required as part of the CMIA, will probably be the vehicle by which we deal with emission reduction, because it needs to be done on a corridor basis. So it's not just, the CMPs are not just about the mobility benefits and maintaining those. They will probably be the vehicle by which we all talk about emission reduction in the corridor. We'd like very much not to have emission reduction factors applied to a project. We'd much rather it be done on a corridor basis, which is one of the reasons why we're trying to revise the RTP guidelines. You know, the project in and of itself isn't causing pollution. The project enhances mobility, and to the extent that mobility has pollution emissions as a result, needs to be dealt with in a slightly different manner. It's not the project itself. It's the use to which the project is put. So that's another reason why we really wanted to have these contracts now, so we could say, here, these are projects that are priorities for you in the legislature, and you can't have it both ways here.
Well, this is an important issue, because as we get further, without making any judgments about whether these are good use of funds or bad use of funds, just people need to know that there's a cost financially to everything. And as we move forward, I think it's important for us to be able to respond in a way and get back information so that people understand, if we do this, you've got another $1 billion worth that could have gone to projects that's not going to really build anything. It's going to just take care of the of getting things, you know, take care of the system.
Right.
And, you know, at some point you have to start looking at what are the trade-offs, and what did the voters think they were getting when they voted for this?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I just want to make sure that I walk away from this, at least knowing that when we come back in June, after our executive director gives us our information, that this commission is able to make a decision, yay or nay, on these projects, rather than at that point talk about another 60 days or another 90 days in extension. I feel very strongly about those, that it shouldn't have been done incorrectly to start with, but if it is, there are some honest errors that could have been made. But then in June, I think we ought to get a final version of this, so we know who did what, and then so we can pass the dollars to somebody else.
Commissioner Chalker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to state I'm in full agreement with the comments that I heard Commissioners Lindsay and just now Commissioner Azarian make, and I'll state it to all the regional agencies that are present. I plan to be really very tough on this issue. And if that forces you in the future to square your shop away, then please take the necessary action to do that. My question, if John can update me, when we come back, are these contracts to be signed? They're by project. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And can you just give an update? I think I missed part of something here. You're talking about the delivery console. Is the membership of that now fully constituted? And if not, when do we expect it to be so?
It is not yet fully constituted. It will be by the June meeting. The RTPA group is starting to figure out who they'd like to recommend and how their participation would unfold. At this point, we are trying to recruit for a chief delivery officer, and until that happens, Stephen Mahler is our person, and I believe Ross Chittenden has been designated by Will. The Delivery Council doesn't have anything to do yet because we don't have baseline information. Quite honestly, what we were hoping to have happen today is that we would have been able to tell you we've got contracts, Will had signed them, and I'd signed them, and we had 55 projects that were raring to go, and that then the Delivery Council would get constituted and they would start developing policies and procedures for how they would be managing those 55 projects. We are slipping.
Do we have any?
We've got 55 projects with some people's signatures on them, but they don't include Will's and mine.
Not one.
Not one.
Wow. Commissioner Gardino?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, two quick questions. If it's okay with the chair and my commissioner colleagues, might we at our May 2nd meeting even just have a brief update next week after you've had a chance to reach out to these agencies with any new information that we might have?
Sure.
If that's okay with the chair. And second item, on the Delivery Council, forgive me for not knowing, is there going to be a commissioner interface on that council, or is that solely from a staff perspective?
We haven't gotten that far yet, Commissioner Gordino. We have envisioned the Delivery Council to be advisory in much the same way as the Real Estate Advisory Panel and the NTACA for aeronautics. The council its charge is to see how the projects are faring from an implementation and project management standpoint. And if we wind up with challenges, the Delivery Council is that first step toward resolving those issues. One of the reasons that we wanted to have this kind of approach, and it was actually something that was suggested to us by Jack Boda and Bob McCleary, is that we don't want to be bringing to you every problem. Because if you have to start figuring out what to do, and given that this is a discretionary program, projects then would be at risk. And we'd much rather that the exceptions come to you for difficult decisions rather than our sticking our nose into whether or not all 55 projects are making progress. We're going to, I don't know how to say this, but we sort of assumed that the project sponsors knew that they've got projects that we like and that they ought to just do what they're supposed to do. But we're starting out of the gate stumbling.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Any additional questions? John, do you have anything else? Move on to 18.
Yeah.
Terry, we're going to go into local seismic bond match bridge program.
Good morning, Commissioners. Terry Abbott. I have an information item here for you on the local seismic bond match program. As you know, with the approval of the bonds, there is an opportunity to provide 11.5% match for federal bridge funds for seismic work up to $125 million. And in the bond, the department has a responsibility to identify the bridges that are eligible to receive the match funds. And in your book item is a list of the bridges that the department has determined are eligible for match funds. We've been tracking these projects for quite a while, and we continue to receive cost increases through revised estimates from the agencies. And I wanted to let you know that there's a chance, if not a likelihood, that over time there may not be adequate funds through this $125 million to match all the projects on that list. And so as a result, one of the things we're doing with this program is we are operating it on a first-come, first-served basis. And the intent there is that this will spark and encourage delivery of the projects. And in addition, we're funding just the new phases of work. In other words, if a project has already begun design, right away, or construction, they don't have an opportunity to come back and get swap out their money and get additional bond funds. So if the project's underway for a particular phase and that phase continues as is. we hope that element will also result in providing the most funds for construction of projects and result in more projects actually going to construction. We are looking at this program as a high priority in terms of programming the funds. There are a few exceptions that I wanted to point out to you, that we will be programming bridge funds for non-seismic work in several different areas. One of them, for instance, is a bridge inspection program. Without the bridge inspection program, we will not receive any federal funds, any federal bridge funds to the state, and so we need to make sure we continue to fund that program. We're also funding preliminary engineering and right-of-way for new starts, because we want to make sure that's, we're going to cap that about 15% of the program. We want to make sure that when the seismic program is finished, that we do have a sustained program. There will be projects in line to be ready for construction in 5 or 6 years. And we're also funding some long lead time and major projects of high significance, such as the First Street Bridge in L.A. It's a multi-funded project. It has transit. It has seismic retrofitting and other elements, and if we take this project out of the program or remove it from the bridge program, it can have an impact on the air quality conformity in the L.A. Basin. So we want to keep that project going, along with Golden Gate Bridge and Gerald Desmond. These are very large and significant projects. We want to make sure that they are able to continue. Gerald Desmond, we're proposing just for the preliminary engineering. It's such a long lead time and such a high-cost project. We want to make sure that they're able to continue while the seismic priority is underway. With respect to programming capacity, we receive about a little over $200 million a year in federal bridge funds on the local side. And with about $1 billion seismic retrofit program, that means that there's a minimum of 5 years of programming in order to be able to deliver the $1 billion program. But with some of the items that I've mentioned up above, that the program will probably take in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 years to have these projects all come forward. But I did want to point out that we are going to put priority on projects that are ready for construction. So if a sponsor has a project that's out several years and they work on that project now, make it ready for construction and bring it forward, we will do what we can to change the federal programming document to make sure that project can be delivered early. In your book, you have a chart that shows a breakdown of the bridges. There's 479 bridges that are in the program. I want to also point out, I think this is good news, and I think this is an indication of the agency is paying attention to the bond and paying attention to this new opportunity, that BART and Redding, Alameda, and Santa Clara have projects that are ready now. We're actually working with them to, since we don't have an appropriation from the legislature or an allocation from the commission, we're working with them to see if they're willing to proceed with those projects with their own match under the condition that when we get an appropriation and an allocation from the commission, that we would be able to swap that out. And that would be about $800,000 worth of match money that's on the table right now, ready to be delivered. And in talking to some of my partners out here, I've been hearing that in the next couple months we could receive as many as 20 or 25 additional projects that would be coming forward. So hopefully the word got out and people are preparing to bring the projects forward. And with that, I conclude my report.
Commissioner Bergson?
Thank you, Terry. This has been a long time coming, and I think, you know, we obviously are trying to expedite as much as possible. One of the concerns I've had, and a question perhaps, whether we received any environmental review relief or replacements or retrofitting, say if they're replacing pretty much the same thing that they were, both at the federal and the state level.
Not at the federal level, but at the state level, there is provision to lessen or eliminate CEQA requirements for seismic retrofitting. So that is a relief, but not on the federal side.
But the federal level, is there any hope that we could work with them and somehow try to expedite this process?
I don't see that opportunity.
Commissioner Bergeson, we do have the NEPA delegation that was provided in Safety Lou. We're one of the five states that received that authority, and we are pursuing full delegation. That won't eliminate the requirements, but it could help to reduce the time frame. So we're hopeful that will be one tool that will be helpful in all of our project work, not just the bridges.
Well, that's encouraging, but I hope it comes forward in a timely manner. Thank you.
Stephen, did you have some input?
I just have a couple of questions for Terry. Normally, the commission sees these bridges as part of the quarterly report on the local seismic retrofit bridges. And is the number of 479 the same number as we see in those quarterly reports, or is this slightly different number?
It's continuing to go down. We continue to have projects delivered, but it is essentially the same projects that we've been seeing and reviewing with you for quite some time on the quarterly reports for the local seismic retrofit program.
So the total list in here is all of the bridges that we normally see. Is there one additional thing in here that's different than what we normally see?
Yes, there is. There's one project that was brought in as part of the bond negotiation effort. It's a project up in the Yerba Buena Island area, and that project has been added to the list and determined eligible for the bridge program.
And that project is eligible because of the language in Prop 1B that allowed for ramps to be, local ramps to be included in the program, and you're adding that into the program.
That's correct.
Any other questions from the commission? Terry, I met with the BART officials, some BART officials last week, and I'm concerned about the bridges. Obviously, they've got the lion's share of the bridges on the list, and I asked them to put together a detailed schedule of between design all the way through to construction. So if you could follow up on that, it'd be helpful maybe for the others, because right now all I see on this chart is just says design. Doesn't give us an idea of when those bridges are going to be retrofitted.
Okay, I will do that. I have also had contact with BART, and they indicate that their first 63 bridges are planned to go to construction this calendar year.
Right. And they have some that stretch out a lot longer. So I think out to, if my memory serves me right, something like 2012, 2013.
Could very well.
Which I think is a bit long, but it'll probably be the same time frame as Will finishes the bridge.
Of just BART or all of them?
Well, I specifically asked BART to put it together, but I would like it to apply to all of the bridges so we have an understanding of when we're starting and when we're going to finish these things.
Can do that.
Mr. Chalker?
Just a quick question, since Terry, both you and Stephen now have piqued my interest. What is the project that was added?
Or
are we not going to develop?
It's ramps that are the from Yerba Buena Island that go San Francisco bound onto Interstate 80.
Which one is it? Is it listed here?
Oh, yes.
It's on the second page. Be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8th from the top on the second page.
TI ramps. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Okay, we'll move on to the informational calendar. Stephen?
Yes, Commissioners, the next agenda items 19 through 26 are information items deemed by staff not to raise any concerns, and each individual item will not be presented unless requested by a commissioner.
Commissioner Lindsay.
Got a couple of quick questions, Stephen, and you don't want to take time because I know we're in a rush. So I'll ask them. You don't have to. I mean, if it's an easy answer, great. If it's not, get back to me on it. On 19... these are emergency G11 allocations, and as I go through those, we're still dealing with 2005 projects, and we've been here before. I tremendously struggle that an emergency is 2.5 years ago. are we going to ever get out of two-year-old emergencies?
Under the delegation has been given to Caltrans, when they close out a project and it's minor dollar amounts, we allow them to close out the project without coming back and getting an allocation from the commission. And another one is where they had slides, and there was a slide that they were working under G11, and new rains came, more stuff slid, so instead of creating a new G11 that would normally be done, they just piggybacked onto a previous G11.
Okay. On item number 20, my understanding of the allocation, the resolution G310 says you can do pavement rehab or safety projects, and then when I look at the projects, it's a road widening project, and I didn't know how we can change what it says you can do.
That one I'd have to get back to you.
Okay. On 20, on 21, I guess, item 20, it says widen street and modify a traffic signal, and we miss it by 100%. And again, maybe somebody get back. I mean,
can you tell me which project?
Item 20, the last one. It was originally came in at $200,000, and now it's at $399,000. I understand. You know, we go through this all the time on cost overruns, but if it's a simple street corner thing, boy, you'd think we could be a little bit better than that. Item 24. We see all of these charts over time that say how we're on time, on task, ahead of the game, and maybe I just don't understand this, and so somebody could get back to me later. It would appear that all of these projects are pending. They're all coming in for an extension. And I guess, is there something different than what we're doing today that we didn't do in the past? I mean, to have an extension was more the out of the ordinary, and now all of a sudden with this it says it is the ordinary. And
well,
so
what's happening here is they're supposed to be awarded within 6 months of allocation, and at the four-month period they're put on a warning. Your 6 months is approaching, get on the stick. And once they reach the 6 months, then they have to come in and ask for an extension from the commission.
So this is the four-month warning?
Yes. This is a warning. We've got 40 projects that have come into the four-month period after allocation. What are you doing? And we've got also 83 that are approaching the 6 months, and some of these would be popping up on your on your request for
Stephen, my point, Will, you had that nice chart with the stars on it and says, boy, we're ahead, we're doing, that thing we saw all the time. I mean, there wasn't ever anything near this kind of numbers on that. I mean, it was unusual that it didn't have a star at 4 months or at 6 months, and there'd be one or two projects. So now all of a sudden we're talking 100?
Well, these are the local projects that the department is not.
So they're not your projects, they're somebody else's projects.
Yes.
Then do we need to deliver a message to the local folks that says 6 months means 6 months?
Well, you can do that when they come in and ask for their extensions.
Well, that's what the that's the purpose of a warning.
Yes.
Kirk just gave it.
Commissioner Gardino?
Thank you.
I have one more quick one, and then I'll go. On item 26, you installed a roundabout on Old River Road, and I just would love to see Caltrans's information about, I'm not a huge roundabout fan, and I'm not opposed that you did it by any stretch of the imagination. I would just like to see whatever documentation somebody has that says roundabouts make sense beyond that T-bone crashes don't happen on roundabouts like they happen in intersections, that factors in pedestrian issues and bicycle issues as offset by traffic issues. And I can't find that anywhere. So maybe you all have something that I don't have.
Commissioner Gardino?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question to John. In item 21, it refers, of course, to minor projects. What defines a minor project? Is that $1 million or less?
Yes, a minor project is a shop type project that's under $1 million. And the department has delegation to do those projects. We give them a lump sum of about $100 million allocation by the commission, and then the department administers that.
So $1 million or less, right, because we have one that's $1 million.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Bergeson?
I was wondering, do we have a figure now on what federal government owes us at reimbursement for federal emergency funds, how this applies to our item?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. I'd have to get back to you.
And I don't know it off the top of my head either, but it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, that would seem to be a substantial amount of money that we ought to be dogging at this point.
It depends on how recent it is. We just did get it. Norma, what was it? Is Norma here?
300 and some.
300 and some odd million dollars we just got back.
Is Mike Miles in the audience? Mike, what is the number? Yeah, but it's a substantial number.
And there's usually a time delay between
It's three or 4 years sometimes before we get the reimbursement.
Slips to mind.
Commissioner Chalker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stephen, on item 23 on page 3, we list the project allocation status. I understand why we've got the 8 projects for 05-06 listed. Why is the list for 06-07 just those 10 projects and relating to the allocations on the previous page? Why do we choose those 10? Should there not be more? What is unique about those 10 that we didn't include the other 53 that were pending?
I'm kind of don't quite understand the question.
Well, what do those 10 projects represent? We have 63 projects that you listed as projects pending bid opening award. But on the project allocation status, we only listed updates for 10 projects. Whereas in 05-06, you had 8 projects pending bid opening award, and we gave an update on all 8 of them. Am I misinterpreting the information that's supposed to be here, or?
Well, the 6-7 projects are current year projects. The 5-6 are really the bad children that got extensions from you in the past. The 6-7s are going to be the ones that are going to be getting extensions for you in the future.
The reason is that they have to be 6 months old, and so that take the 10 are the ones through November.
Right. Those are the 10 oldest?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
The rest haven't hit the 6-month threshold.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for the commission? I have one, Stephen. On 23 also, on the write-up it says, in addition, for various reasons, the department was unable to award construction contracts for 25 shop programs, totaling $235 million. That's a lot of money. I'm just curious. We don't have to do it today, but I'd like to know why those things lapsed.
One of them was the District 4 seismic retrofit project for the headquarters for the District 4 office building, and that money
was
allocated by the commission and then reused for other projects.
That was 64 million.
That was 64.
So that's
$40 million.
$40 million. So that still leaves a little under $200 million. That's all.
And then there are other projects that basically have not been awarded, and we can get back to you with a list of what.
If you could just give me a list, I'd like to see them. Thank you. Okay. That concludes our information calendar. We're moving on to the consent calendar. Robert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. For agenda items 27 through 52, these are on the consent calendar. There are changes to the consent calendar. I'll go through them. Agenda item number 37, 3 resolutions were withdrawn. They are C-19600, C-19612, and C-19619. Agenda item number 38 has been withdrawn. There's some information that we're still lacking on that item. Agenda item number 39, items 11, 22, and 32 were withdrawn. There are technical changes to agenda item number 43 regarding project number 2 on its location, and it needs to be corrected on the vote list of the attachment. Agenda item number 44 is a technical change to project number 1 regarding the location. For agenda item number 46, there's a technical change to correct project number 1 for the vote list and for the dollar amounts on the attachment and the budget number. With those changes, staff would recommend the consent calendar. I would point out that agenda item 37 requires 6 affirmative votes.
Move the consent calendar.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I have, again, a couple of questions that I can either pull them off the consent calendar, we could talk about them, it'll take forever, or I could just maybe ask them if that's okay. Your call.
If you're brief, let's just ask them.
I'll be brief.
I stress brief.
Item 28 is a change of scope on TCRP project, and I wondered, you know, and again, you get back to me later, how much can I change scope on an old TCRP project and still have a TCRP project? You would assume that somewhere there's a drop-dead difference.
We'll have Annette respond.
Commissioner, at this point, there is no drop-dead difference. They can continue to change scope. We want the projects delivered. I mean, that's the main thing, but there's nothing preventing them to come in asking for project amendments. Scope changes, funding changes,
schedule changes. So there's no rules to that game?
No.
So I was going to build a highway, and I'm going to build a bicycle path.
That would be an alternative project, and that's...
Well, but I mean, if I made the amendments over time, then I could make that scope change and still fit into the process.
It would be, no, it would have to be to that specific project that we currently have programmed. If they come in and take a highway project, make it a bike project, that's an alternative project and it's not that easy.
So if I got a TCRP to do a 10-mile stretch of road and decided to do one, but it's still in the same, that's okay.
Correct.
I just couldn't make 12 miles of bicycle. Okay. Makes a lot of sense to me. On item 29 is also a TCRP project that goes up in money from $85 million to $187 million, and I just wonder where the $100 million bucks comes from. I thought we had all that money accounted for.
That was 28, Commissioner?
29.
Thank you. And you're talking about the TCRP money, the $5.8 million?
Well, actually, it says this amendment also updates the total project estimate from $85 million to $187 million. So that adds $100 million to the project, and we're not saying where the money comes from.
I'll have to have the department address the escalation in that project.
I don't care why it went up. I just want to know how we're going to pay for it.
It looks like, it's local Transnet money from San Diego. They're going to cover the
Thank
additional
you.
Funds.
That's nice of you. Item 39 is all of these land deals, and on this 10, 12, 13, 17, 28, and 30, say that these were done by auction, but it also says they had one bidder. How in the world do you have an auction with one bid? That's not an auction.
Well,
it's an offer.
It's what happens is the department puts the properties up for sale in an auction, and they ask, do we have any bidders? And they got one bid.
If I sell something in an auction, John, and there's one bid, it doesn't sell. I can't do that. It's the law on equipment that I sell.
But
you have to have two bidders.
No, you do not.
I think that they have a lot of bidders that show up, but only one person will bid on it at that time. That's my
opinion. It doesn't matter if we put a piece of property up for public auction. It's just like going out to bid for a construction project. You know, we can't dictate how many people are going to respond. In these instances, public notice, a public auction, one person bids on the property, and we set a minimum bid generally. If they meet the requirements, they get the property.
Fascinating. Okay, the last question is on, maybe not last, 42.
This is brief.
This is brief.
And only two.
On item number 9, if I'm reading that correctly, near Bakersfield on Heath Road, we're installing a traffic signal at one location to improve traffic flow. And if I'm reading this correct, it's a $900 million traffic signal.
Where?
That seems pretty outrageous to me.
Which one are you talking about?
I'm sorry, a $900,000 traffic signal.
$900,000.
Yeah. I mean, every other one I ever see is $300,000, $400,000. I mean, that just seems to be absolutely exorbitant.
Where are you?
Item 42, number 9. Twice. So they raised
that's state, federal, and then total amount. It's the same number.
Okay, I'm reading it. Because it says sources under other contributions will 747. So I took 747 and added it to 427 and got 9.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So, I mean, somebody just checked. That more than I ever paid for a traffic signal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm done.
Thank you. We have a motion. I need a second. But you have a comment?
I'm happy to provide the second, but I just had one quick question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. On item 31, relative to ongoing erosion on the 1.6 miles of coastal bluff and the Del Mar Bluffs, since it says ongoing erosion, should we expect more erosion problems in the future?
Forever.
Yes. Many of our facilities are located next to hill slides that are in constant movement. And, you know, Devil Slide is and Confusion Hill are probably two very good examples of where we're going. As long as we maintain facilities there, we're going to continue to have problems.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Director.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 I think we're okay.
We got all six.
Because it was a unanimous approval. Right?
No, I was worried there for a minute after listening to
So we'll start over again. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, this passes. Okay, moving on to item 53.
Yes, Commissioners, item 53 is a STIP amendment on Route 905 in San Diego County. It's here for action today. It was originally presented for notice in November of 2006. It's a rather unusual STIP amendment in that it concerns a special source of funding. That's federal border improvement funds. These were funds made available under the last federal authorization, Safety Lou. That's a federal formula program for projects near the international borders. California, under that formula, is set to receive about $91.3 million. When Caltrans first brought this to us, they were proposing to add about $81 million in funding to the construction of the project. Shortly thereafter, they determined that they had a substantial increase in cost for right-of-way for the project. They're now bringing this back, proposing to program $80 million for right-of-way. I should also add here that under state law, these federal border funds are programmed by the Commission through the STIP as interregional funds, but it's a rather special source, and it does not count towards the ordinary STIP formulas for the interregional program. And I think with that, I turn it to the department. Oh, I want to point out this address is right away. There is mention of construction in the book item, and the construction, the reprogramming of the construction for this project will be addressed through the STIP augmentation.
Any questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Gardino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 3 of the report, it talks about the department will continue to seek funding for the remaining unfunded phases of Route 905 corridor, and it mentions potential sources, but I'm not seeing in here how much more money will be needed.
I'm going to defer to the department on that one.
I'll try and answer that,
yeah.
A little bit. If you go back to the first page on the action update, the last line, it says that Sandag's determined $80 million is needed to fund the right-of-way. Actually, that right-of-way determination is not certain. It could be a maximum of $80 million that could be needed because they're trying to either settle those right-of-ways or they're running their way through the legal system. So until that settles, there won't be any idea of what the shortfall is. And if they won all of those and got them at the original cost, there would be probably no need. Am I right on that? Pedro is nodding his head in affirmative. So we have no idea, they have no idea what the funding need will be.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
How did we get an $80 million shortfall on right-of-way?
The property values increased dramatically is how we got that.
Oh, not that.
Pedro, do you want to come up and respond?
When we did the original right-of-way estimate and we certified, we have seen an increase of almost double the amount in the last 2 years in that area. We're working and basically we're running all of these cases through the condemnation process and going through legal trials because there is no point right now trying to settle or come up with agreements because the gap is too far away between our estimates and what the property owners are.
When was the original estimate done, Pedro?
I'm going off memory, but I think it was around 2005, 2006. 2005 is when it was.
Yeah, I don't think...
Has it gone up that much?
I don't think it's gone up that much. I think there's something wrong with your right-of-way estimates.
Well, but one of the things that... And we have some appraisals, and we have independent expert witness appraisals that are validating our appraisals, the department's appraisals. But the big difference here is that we're doing a design sequencing project. So at this point in time, one of the biggest issues is that from our point of view is we're at a point right now that you know, we have the whole corridor under a condemnation process. We have about three very large property owners that represent the amount that basically you're looking at.
But if Pedro, to respond to the commissioner's question, is there, I mean, that valuation level has not been set necessarily by our appraisals. It's set by the condemnation actions and what the property owners are demanding.
Correct.
So that is what is defining that much larger parameter.
But you've also decided, I mean, it's not about the real estate appraisal as much as it is a legal strategy you're employing.
Well, that's certainly part of it, yes. But
I mean, the attorneys have said, let's go. And I think it's a situation, it's an unfortunate set of circumstances that the legal strategy is causing the delay in the project. And it is what it is, but it's not solely because, you know, someone missed the appraisal.
Well, let me respond to that for a minute. There have been a number of other parcels in this corridor that have been purchased at the appraisal that Caltrans obtained, either from an independent source or their own.
Right.
There are three landowners who felt that, you know, that their property was worth considerably more, and that created this large gap. But there had been a number, I don't know what the exact number is, but a large number of parcels, the majority of the parcels in the corridor, had been purchased at the appraisal levels that Caltrans had. So I don't think the appraisal levels are out of whack.
So is there a chance then, if we go to court and the judge rules that in favor of Caltrans that the numbers are lower, that we're not using the $80 million? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Yes, that is a possibility.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Motion for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And moving on to items 54.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. The item before you today is an information item providing notice to program the remaining $3.4 million available in the EEM program. The projects identified in the book item have been recommended by the State Resources Agency based on their evaluation of the projects submitted. This item will come back to the Commission in June for action.
Okay, any questions? Thank you. Item 55.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 55 is a review of the rate for state matching for federal airport improvement program grants. This item was brought to the Technical Advisory Committee on Aeronautics. They are the ones who recommended last year that it be reduced from a 5% match rate by the state to a 2.5% match rate. In discussions with the TACA folks, they continue to recommend this reduction. I do feel it's appropriate. The locals have been stepping up to the plate and matching the rate that they need on the state and the local level. What this basically means, the locals are paying more funding into it in order to fund these particular projects. We have Mary Frederick here. If you have any questions of her, otherwise, staff would recommend that you act on this next month. This is for information this month.
So moved.
Second.
It's not an action
it's
item.
Information.
It's an information item. Any questions? Okay, moving on to item 56. Robert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Agenda item 56 is state legislative matters. You have, as part of your packet, a list of the various bills that we are monitoring for you. They're broken out into several categories of what the commission supports, what you have indicated as an official watch position, items that you sent off to TACA for their advice, and also items that you've sent off to the Real Estate Advisory Panel for their advice. I can tell you that for TACA, they had one item that they were looking at. They were going to recommend that you have a watch position on it, which was SB 798 regarding criminal background checks for airport operations. This deals with people who are learning how to fly airplanes. I can tell you that yesterday the Senate Public Safety Committee considered the item, and the bill did not pass out of that committee. It failed, and it's coming back for reconsideration at a later date. In regards to the Real Estate Advisory Panel, they also met. It was something that I inadvertently didn't explain to you yesterday as part of the commission reports. They recommended that the commission, where is it? One moment. That you take a watch position on ACA 9 by DeVore. What this particular bill proposes to do, as yet to be assigned to any committee, is that current law has for state properties an exemption from being taxed. This one would change the current statute so that Caltrans property would be taxed if the local county assessor, after 2 years, determines that there's no action occurring on that particular property. So this particular item is recommended by the Real Estate Advisory Panel for a watch position by the commission. Moving on, there are other actions that were taken, but in the sake of time, I'll skip that and go to the main item that the commission staff has on the agenda. SB 184 by Senator Alquist is a bill that started off life a couple of years ago with a different bill. The commission asked that staff work with, at that time, Boucher's bill, and look at how to change it. This came back this year as FE 184. And to put it in context, right now the commission has two ways of dealing with projects that are being advanced. You have an AB 3090 process where the commission will have a local agency come in and ask for a project to be advanced out of a future fiscal year into the current fiscal year. Commission can approve that project and give either a reimbursement in terms of money or to give a project out in a different fiscal year. The second way that you can do a project of this sort, if a local agency wishes to come in, is to ask for an AB 872. Under AB 872, you can come in as a local agency without asking for the commission's approval of that project and begin expenditure of your local funds. But you do have to come in and ask for, at some point, approval of that. What this bill does, SB 184, is to make a change to say that the local agency can start when the project is within the fiscal year, then without coming in for the commission's approval. And under a certain set of conditions, if they meet them, the commission would be required under this proposed bill to approve the allocation. I'll go through that. What they would have for the conditions are that the commission makes an allocation for the project and the department would execute the fund transfer agreement, that the expenditures would be eligible for reimbursement in accordance to state and federal laws, and that the regional agencies have complied with all of the legal requirements for the project, such as CEQA. with that, the execution of an agreement with the department to transfer the reimbursement funds for a project described in the division that I just mentioned. The commission does have the opportunity to delay reimbursement for this section. Only a program or cash management issues prevent the immediate repayment. It also goes on to say that the section is limited to program projects in the current fiscal year. The portion that commission staff had helped the project proponents to work on was to look at the expenditures. And what the commission staff came up with is within 12 months of the first expenditure, the regional agencies can request an allocation from the commission. The key difference here is that the staff recommended that it be a May in terms of what the commission can do, but if they met all the requirements that I've mentioned, the commission may make an allocation. Under current proposal in SB 184, it says that the commission shall make an allocation. The commission's concern with, staff's concern with this particular change in the proposed legislation is that it takes away from the discretion that the commission has in acting on an allocation. You take two steps in doing any projects that comes before the commission. The first step that you have is the programming of a project in the STIP. That's your conceptual approval of what is being recommended by the local agency. The second step that you have is the actual allocation for that project. That's when you commit funding to that. At that point, when you make the allocation, you have an opportunity to look at the project, ask questions of the local agency, find out if they're still on course, that they don't have any scope changes or any funding changes or any delays, or in this case, there wouldn't be delay, but speeding up of the project. You get an opportunity to look at the schedule that they're proposing to move up the project by. Under this proposed piece of legislation, commission staff is concerned that you won't have that second opportunity to look at that project. Staff's reading of the bill SB 184 would put you in a position of only approving it as a ministerial action. With that, that concludes my remarks on SB 184. Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority and I think Orange County Transportation Authority are here to answer any questions you may have.
All right.
Mr. Wilkerson.
Well, as Robert has indicated, that this bill is different from the bill that we saw when we went through this exercise, I think, a year ago. And the primary purpose of this, as I read it, Robert, is to allow for a time above the 12 months, which is currently the procedure that's used under these circumstances. But as far as the shall, and as I read the bill, and I happen to have a copy of it here, it shall approve only under those circumstances that all of these provisions are met. And it also states that that nothing in the section shall establish a priority for allocation made by the commission. So all you're doing is, I mean, as I read it anyway, that it's under the normal procedures or policy that we now operate. And so, that part doesn't bother me as much because I think all the provisions are taken care of as far as what they have provided within the statute that's before us is the same procedure that's used, I think, in getting approval for any of these particular cash advance programs, such as the 3090, and where they have been able to advance money that is locally is derived locally, that there should be the same opportunity, I think, to be able to be reimbursed on that basis with the provisions that are written within this particular statute.
Commissioners, one of the reasons we're asking for a position and we recommend at least neutral, and it's up to you if you want to support it, is that we've been asked by legislative staff what we think. And so that's why we're bringing it to you. Notwithstanding sort of the procedural concerns, I think as a practical matter, we as staff can live with this, and there are ways in which we can, as Commissioner Bergeson has pointed out, review the project and deal with whether or not it meets the terms and conditions. So there, you do have the ability to say no if it doesn't meet the terms and conditions. So I think we do have some downside protections. It's not perfect, but I don't see why we couldn't support it.
Why would we want to? I mean, if what we're doing now works and it's not a challenge, why do we want somebody to tell us how to run our railroad?
It doesn't really do that.
Well, this procedure already exists in statute.
I'm saying, then why do we need a law to tell us to do it that way?
The origin of this is that when there wasn't money, there were some jurisdictions that did this, and we couldn't reimburse them, and so they were out their dollars. So all this says is if they is the real import here isn't changing anything other than if a jurisdiction, if we wind up in a situation like we were 3 years ago, we say there ain't any money, and they go ahead and they put their money forward to get the project done, they're saying we don't want to be constrained by a 12-month deadline. And if it, what happened was the commission said we don't have the money. So under the existing statute, that meant they were out their dollars. They went ahead to keep the program going, and we weren't able to reimburse them.
And under this law, what would happen?
We would essentially say we understand. We'd make a finding that we do not have the dollars within 12 months, but we would approve it for future allocation when resources were available.
If it still mattered.
Why can't so who we got stuck for how much?
There were several. This occurred in Santa Cruz. This occurred in Placentia. Kurt, did you have anything in Santa Clara? But Santa Cruz and Placentia.
So it happened twice for a significant dollar?
Well, you know, these are two communities where even a little bit is significant. Yeah.
John, my point is that, you know, in 7 years that I've been here, we've done thousands of projects. We don't have a problem. To pass a law for 0.2% issue doesn't make a lick of sense to me.
Okay.
Well, why can't we pass or have a policy that
exactly
we wouldn't allow that to happen? I agree with Commissioner Lindsay. I don't know that we need legislation to tell us what to do. Commissioner Gardino?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur with Commissioner Bergeson's assessment of this. This doesn't seem to allow for anything that we don't already consider other than not hurting jurisdictions, even if it is only in one or two cases. I take Commissioner Lindsay's point well, but even if it is in one or two cases, to be penalized, as it were, just because the clock ran out during times when we were short of funds. So I would recommend, as I believe our executive director is suggesting, that at a minimum we just stay neutral on this, if not support it, but neutral would certainly be fine as well. I just don't see why we would want to take an opposed position to this bill.
Commissioner Harp?
Does this would this give local or regional agencies more leeway? Would they be able, for instance, to like pull a project up and move it, get funds going, and then come to us and say, you know, we've done this, that project wasn't necessarily on the list of projects that were high up on the priority list?
The way this particular activity works is that we have a STIP project program this year.
Right.
We don't have the resources to make the allocation. The jurisdiction steps in and uses its own money to advance the project.
Okay, so it would be for recognized projects that
right.
were in the pipeline. We just didn't have the money for it now.
Right.
But they do.
They do. They're willing to do that. Under current statute, they could only be reimbursed. They have to come back in for reimbursement within 12 months, within a year after taking the action. If we don't have the resources to repay them, then they are out those dollars. And so these were, if but for our budget situation, we would be providing state resources to that project. So they're backfilling it, and they would like the state.
And they did this knowing that their own risk. They knew that was I mean, nobody changed the rules. That
right.
They knew that going in. They right. were taking that risk and were willing to do it.
Yeah.
What's the best course of action? Neutral?
Yeah, just one additional comment. I think, and sort of in response to Kurt's comments, I think the legislature tells us what we can't do. By the same token, you know, maybe we should need the authority of what we can do, give us some latitude. And in a case where I think we're concerned about project delivery and getting these projects going, and if locals are willing to put their money in advance to do that, I think that should be given a consideration. I mean, we want the job done, and it's to everyone's advantage to get those projects rolling. So I would move then that we take a wimpy position of neutrality.
Yep. Second.
I'll second that, but I'll strike the wimpy.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye. Opposed.
The record will show one opposition.
We will send a letter of strong neutrality. We're Switzerland.
We're going
to
take
Mr. Chairman, before you take the break, could I just take a minute to bring you up to speed on two of the administration's important initiatives, both the public-private partnership bill and the design build legislation sponsored by the administration were heard in Senate Transportation and Housing on Tuesday. The design build legislation has been amended to reflect the language that was included in AB 143 last year, authorizing 10 projects, 5 for the regions, 5 for the state. States. That bill cleared the committee. The public-private partnership bill, in order to keep a vehicle moving, because we're up against a legislative deadline this Friday, was amended to take out reference to public-private partnerships. So currently, and was approved by the committee as a public-public partnership bill. And we certainly hope to continue to have discussions with the legislature as the bill moves through to reinsert provisions, reasonable provisions related to the attraction of private investment in our transportation system.
Just a quick question. There's a lot of bills here that look like they're placeholders pretty much. So I'm just kind of curious as to how up-to-date this was before it got in this packet, and there's a lot of bills going to be amended in the next couple of weeks, so I'm just looking at process to figure out if there's anything here. You want us to watch these, but, you know, by the time we have a meeting in June, the watching will be over. So I'm just kind of wondering how we can...
What we've been doing in regards to that, when we have dark dates on the commission's calendar, the commission's executive committee will be looking at the bills that staff has been monitoring for you and alerting you to them. The other thing we've implemented this year is off the commission meeting cycles, I've been sending out updates of the bills to you in the format that you have so that you can see what's going on and express your concerns or wishes as to what you think the commission staff should be doing or advising the executive committee regarding what bills should be acted upon.
Robert, it might be helpful. Point,
I think it would be helpful if we could, after committee hearings, because some of these bills will never get out of committee, and I think it would be, you know, rather than spending time monitoring bills that are not going anyplace. But the other element, too, that's very important, I think, as far as our information, is what's happening in the budget subcommittees. And as
we've
those
been monitoring
forward,
that.
If those could be monitored and periodic emails, just information, you know, as far as where those bills are and what, you know, what's happening.
We'll take care of that.
I think that's a good point. I think if you just email all the commissioners, not just the executive committee, so that they get a feeling of what's going on.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gardino.
Thank you. Director Kempton, I'm glad you raised SB 56 and SB 61. I had circled them to ask you about. These, both design, build, and public-private partnerships are something that was in the Commission's annual report of items of great significance to this Commission. If there is a way that we could have more in-depth updates on what the changes to those bills that have been proposed might mean and what we as a Commission might want to do, since both those items are high priorities for us, that would be helpful, at least to me.
You lost. It's simple.
We'd be happy to work with the staff to and we never say die, Commissioner Lindsay.
I didn't say die. We lost the battle. The war is not over.
No, we haven't.
Mr. Lindsay, you were too subtle on that. What are you trying to tell us?
We want a design build. They said you get to do 10. Whoopee.
Okay. We're going to take a 10-minute break and be back here at 11:37.
It says 5 north, 5 south in the amendment. We want 5.
Okay, item number 57, the department.
Please take your seats.
Okay, item 57, commissioners. The department is requesting an allocation for four shop projects totaling $87,349,000. These are advanced projects. The opportunity to advance the allocations for these shop projects is due to current year contract award savings. The projects are ready to receive, and an allocation at this time provides an opportunity to begin construction at an earlier date. Staff recommends approval of this allocation request.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 58.
Item 58 is a financial allocation for a locally administered STIP projects off the state highway system. Tehama County is requesting a supplemental allocation of $256,000 for additional PS&E and right-of-way costs on five bridge projects in Tehama County. Under the STIP guidelines, supplemental funds for locally administered STIP projects are to be programmed in the STIP or through a STIP amendment. Tehama County has not programmed these supplemental funds requests. However, given the critical nature of the bridge projects and the fact that Tehama County does not have any other alternative funding for these projects, staff recommends approval of this allocation request.
Move approval. This is not normal, is it?
No, this is not.
So why are we doing it this way?
Barbara O'Keefe is here to answer any questions for you.
Good morning, Commissioner, Chairperson Galmetti. We have a cost savings from one bridge project, and we would like to use that cost savings on five other bridge projects and leverage federal funds in the amount of $1.23 million.
No, I understand what's going on, but that's not the procedure. The procedure, as I understand it, is to file for a STIP amendment.
That's correct.
Am I right?
That's correct.
So why wasn't that done?
We had difficulty obtaining right-of-way, and we worked with four property owners, and we were able to prevent the condemnation process, and that took an extensive amount of time.
But I guess, you know, I'm okay with doing what we're doing, but I want us to follow the procedure, and I have trouble with the fact that you didn't follow the amendment procedure.
Understood, Commissioner.
Okay. Any other questions by the Commissioner?
I'll move. I'll second the motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Item 59.
Item 59, Commissioners, is a financial allocation for a STIP project on the state highway system. The department is requesting an advance allocation of $35,553,000 for one STIP project. The ability to allocate funds for this project is due to capacity made available from current year projects that will not be available for ready for allocation this fiscal year. The department is ready to proceed with this project, and an allocation will allow construction to proceed. Staff recommends approval of this allocation request.
Project number two got pulled?
Project number two was pulled, yes, on the change list.
Number said?
Where did it go?
They're not ready to advance it at this time.
Move it to approval.
Have a motion?
Yeah.
Do we have a second?
Will, do you understand what?
I don't know. I don't know the issue, but Kome Gise is in the audience if he wants to. There he is right there. He's coming forward.
Let me, you know, Mr. Chairman, the only reason Will and I got, we had the opportunity to have a meeting with Senator Denham from Merced talk about this stuff, and then, like yesterday, and all of a sudden it's pulled, and I'm thinking, I don't know that I want to go home.
This is a different project than the one we talked about with Senator Denham. This is, in fact, this is solely ITIP funded. It was a project that we were advancing, actually, from 7-8 to 6-7. What we found is we need more money for right-of-way, and the only capacity we have is available in the STIP augmentation, which we don't have access to until your vote in June.
Okay, there's
the
a motion.
The project is ready to go. We just don't have the money to do it.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item number 60.
Item number 60 is a financial allocation for two locally administered STIP projects. This is also an advance allocation of $579,000 to fund two locally administered STIP projects. The ability to allocate these projects is due to capacity available in current year from projects that are not ready for allocation in this fiscal year. The agencies are ready to proceed, and an allocation will allow construction to proceed in an earlier date. Project number one is the East Side Potter Valley Road reconstruction in Mendocino, and project number two is Wilson Way Bridge rehab in Stockton. Staff recommends approval of these allocation requests.
Move its approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 61.
Item 61 is a financial allocation for locally administered STIP transportation enhancement projects. This is an advance allocation request of $819,000 for two locally administered T projects. Project number one is Pacific Park Drive landscaping in the city of Aliso Viejo, and project number two is the Irvine Business Park Complex sidewalk enhancement in Irvine. As there is adequate T capacity in the 7-8 fiscal year, staff recommends approval of these allocation requests.
Move approval.
Wait, just a minute.
Discussion?
This says recommends deferred at this time.
The department recommends a deferral, but staff recommends approving these allocation requests as there is adequate T capacity.
Move approval. Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 62.
Item 62 is a financial allocation for projects with costs that exceed 20% of the programmed amount. This project is located on Route 12 in Solano County. This safety project will install 5.7 miles of concrete median barrier and outside rumble strips. In addition, the project will install 7 miles of median channelization devices. The project is programmed in the shop currently for $896,000. The department is requesting an allocation of $2,938,000, an increase of $2,042,000 over the programmed amount. The total amount of the increased cost is related to a change in scope and extension of the project limits. Originally, the department programmed two projects on Route 12 in the shop. Given some recent incidents on Route 12 and new traffic analysis by the department has revised the scope of the project to accelerate the planned improvements from the second project and add the installation of concrete median barrier and median channelization devices. The increased cost is due to the expanded scope of the project and its expanded limits. Staff recommends approval of this allocation request.
Mr. Chair, I don't understand the costs exceeding 20% of 228% over. What does that mean?
Can I weigh in here on this? You're changing the scope of the project to take care of some safety problems.
Right.
They lost 10 or 12 people on this stretch of highway.
13.
It goes up almost every week. It's one of the worst blood alleys in the state. So the reason for that was my question on this, too. It's not a matter of somebody messing up on estimates or whatever. This is a matter of changing the scope of the project and trying to make this a safer road. And
My question was not the total amount, but it's the 20% over 228%, the mathematics, that I don't understand. Why just
no.
Give a figure?
Well, what it is, Commissioner, is projects that are over 20% over the programmed amount have to come back for approval. The department doesn't have authority to award without coming back.
But it's 228% over
already.
Well,
that's more than 20%, so they have to come back to us. They just calculated how much it was over.
I move for approval, Mr. Chair.
Director Kempton,
yes.
Is there? I guess I'm troubled by the way this thing was put together because it was. It's really a compilation of two different things together, so it looks like it's 200 and some odd percent over.
Right.
Isn't there a better way of presenting this to us than...
That was my question.
Well, I suspect, we could have approached it in a variety of different ways. This seemed to be the most straightforward from our perspective. As Commissioner Arp has indicated, this is a very, very dangerous stretch of roadway. We... have lost 13 people to fatalities, and we were working with a couple of members of the legislature on putting some improvements in there. We did expand the scope of this project significantly, and we've also, dipping into other sources of funds, I think Mr. Sartipi is using some of his minor program funds as well. We're putting in rumble strips, we're putting in double striping, we're putting in special signing, we're putting in delineators along the roadway to try to stem the increasing number of accidents we're experiencing in this heavily traveled corridor. It's a two-lane, as you, I'm sure, Mr. Chairman, you
know. I've been on it.
Well, the road that the project, one of the projects in the stretch will, in fact, accomplish a realignment of some of the most more dangerous curves, and we've just tried to react quickly to get some improvements in place that will, as I say, stop the loss of life in this dangerous corridor.
This was a project. The project actually was going to come before us anyway because there was a cost increase relative to one or both of the projects. So we were already going to be dealing with it at this meeting. It turns out that, as Will points out, more recently there's been an increase in fatalities, and so the department has taken advantage of the agendized item or the item that was coming through the process to repackage it to get a more robust solution. So I don't think maybe this isn't the best way, but given the urgency, I think it's appropriate to have been packaged this way. The department doesn't necessarily have that many options to turn around and fix a problem area, and I think we ought to be commending them for, you know, trying to take advantage of something that we were going to be dealing with anyway and getting it right.
I don't have a problem with what the scope of the work. I think it's needed. You know, I read the paper all the time about the accidents out there. I know we have a member of the Highway Patrol here who could back us up on that. It's just, I maybe it wasn't written up right, and you know what we're really doing is expediting the second project and merging them together.
Right.
You know, maybe we should have said that to start with. You know, showing it's 229% over. You know, right, that's not the case. That's not what we're doing here.
Yeah, we should endeavor to be clear in right, what we're trying to accomplish, and we'll make that effort.
Right.
But nonetheless, I'm glad that everyone recognizes the importance of this very serious problem that we have to address.
And Commissioner Bergeson?
Yeah, I'd just like some clarification as far as the source of funds. I think there was an indication that there could be some other source of funds available for
this will be shop money. Shop funding, and then there's program dollars, which I think are also shop, and then you're going to put some minor money into this as well, Bijan?
Okay, we have a certainty as far as funding is available.
Yes.
I'll second the motion.
Who made the motion?
I did.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion passes. Moving to item 63.
Mr. Chairman, please note I voted for a cost overrun.
That is on record.
Yeah. Okay, item 63.
Item 63 is an allocation for supplemental funds for previously voted projects. The department is requesting supplemental funds for a STIP project on Route 1 in Santa Cruz County. The project is to widen the route from 4 to 6 lanes and construct concrete barrier and sound walls. The project was originally allocated for $40 million in September 2005 and received supplemental funds totaling $5,300,000 to award the contract in March of 2006. An additional $5,532,000 in supplemental funds is requested, representing a 12% increase over the current allocation to complete ongoing construction. As the construction is less than 50% complete, the department is requesting that this amount to cover the increased costs already incurred and to restore the project contingency. The reasons for the cost increase include unsuitable materials encountered in the subgrade, expanded rock slope protection, and changes in installation of the abutment piles. It should be noted that the Santa Cruz County Regional Transportation Commission voted to restore the contingency at a lesser level, reducing their supplemental funds request by $666,000 to $4,866,000. Staff has reviewed the information provided by both the department and Santa Cruz County Regional Transportation Commission regarding the supplemental funds request. Given that the project is less than 40% complete and the nature of the project, staff recommends approval of the $5,532,000 in supplemental funds requested by the department to ensure that there are adequate funds to complete the project. And the department is available to answer questions.
Mr. Gardino.
Thank you, Chairman Gilmetti. Director Kempton, if I may, I appreciate that we've delineated in the staff report the reasons for a cost increase. In your professional judgment, do you feel that these are issues that could have been anticipated, or that these are reasons that you're comfortable with relative to the funding request?
Well, Commissioner Gardino, I wouldn't say I'm comfortable with any request for a cost increase. We have discuss some of the problems that we encounter during construction, problems that we've encountered during as we estimate projects. We've attempted to improve on that, and I think the record would show that across the board we have. Nonetheless, we continue to have issues like this. We would not recommend this unless we were comfortable that it was the appropriate thing to do. But I'm not happy about these requests for supplemental funds.
Okay. Commissioner Chalker?
Can someone explain to me under these reasons? One of them is a redesign of the rock slope in reaction to property owner concerns. Is there some reason this redesign didn't occur back in the environmental process, and why it was waited until construction was occurring?
Is Rich here?
The district director is here to answer.
Good morning, Chairman Gilmetti, Commissioners. Rich Krumholz, District 5 Director. I'm afraid I can't answer that question. I'll be honest with you. As far as the rock slope protection, the additional work that was needed, it's my understanding that it wasn't anticipated, and it was something that did occur or did come up during the construction. And an effort was made to, make sure we had integrity in the stream and protecting the private property with the additional rock slope protection.
So if any property owner comes out during construction on a department project, that the reaction is the contractor will stop work, they'll go back and redesign on property owner concerns? That's essentially what happened here, right?
Not necessarily, Commissioner. Obviously, if it was deemed that the property owner may have had a legitimate complaint, which was not anticipated at the time the plans were put together, then the resident engineer, the contractor, and the resident engineer could agree that a change was warranted. Again, I don't know the specifics, and obviously Mr. Krumholz does not either, but we would not just react to a property owner's complaint. It would have to be justified.
Commissioner, we did encounter, unforeseen buried objects in the areas of the stream. So I don't know that if there was a connection between the rock slope protection and those things that we discovered during construction.
What were those?
I understand they were significant concrete beams, fairly large masses of concrete that were not detected during our investigation during the project design.
Okay, any other discussion?
We got this letter that is kind of in conflict with what this has said. Maybe George needs to talk to us.
Good morning, Commissioners. Chair Gilmetti, I'm George Dondero, Executive Director of the Santa Cruz County Regional Transportation Commission. I know it might be unusual to protest a supplemental on a project that you support, and I want to emphasize that our county does support the project, and we do understand that cost increases are, a part of doing business in this realm. But However, my board did not support the full increase because, as was mentioned earlier, this is the second sizable cost increase on this project in a fairly short period of time. And essentially, this cost increase takes up about half of our STIP capacity in this funding cycle. So they did question it, and they directed us to conduct a peer review of all the issues that Caltrans presented. And we had Caltrans come back and present some detailed information. We had engineers from four cities and our county, plus our on-call engineer who's on contract to us, plus the planning staff. And most of the cost increases were concluded to be justified. It was clear that a lot of the things that Rich mentioned, like the buried concrete and some of the other issues, there were buried hidden utility lines that also showed up that just weren't mapped anywhere. Things of that nature, we understood, could not be anticipated. However, there did appear to be some ambiguities in the design specs regarding the pilings. And that is a major cost element, and we felt like that might have been an avoidable cost. And so came back with the recommendation, which my board supported, which was to reduce the contingency line item in the project, since it is 40% done. And by Caltrans' admission, most of the really hidden, potentially expensive cost increases have been exposed at this point. Most of that work is completed. That's not to say there won't be any more, but we're hoping there aren't. But I think the message that my commission wanted to send to you and to Caltrans is that essentially they do not rubber stamp cost increases, and secondly, as a responsible partner, they're going to continue to monitor these things. And finally, they would request that you reduce the requested allocation by the $666,000, as stated in our letter. And I would be glad to answer any other questions.
The concrete that you found there, was this a dump area at one time, or?
It was actually in the creek bed. It was like a U-shaped forms that were. I'm not sure what the purpose of them was, but it was they were buried below the surface of the ground.
So somebody dumped them.
Somebody. They were formed in there. They've been there a long time. There were no records that they were there. The contractor had to go in and break them up, and it was down in a creek bed, which was an environmentally sensitive area, caused them a lot of delays and costs. I mean, that was something we didn't take issue with. That nobody could have known these were there. In terms of the rock slope issue, if you don't mind me adding,
please,
on, Rich,
please.
One of the issues was that the rock slopes underneath the current overcrossings were stabilized using sacks of concrete, which were then just wetted down. It's an old way of doing it. What the engineers didn't know was that there were seven layers of these sacks. So there was the assumption that they only had to remove one layer because we wanted to replace it with natural rock. So I'm not sure how you would know that. And there was another place where I think the property owner suggested that there was an extension of this rock slope that hadn't been previously mapped out, and that it did make sense to do that.
Chairman.
Commissioner Bergerson?
Yeah, a question. If we were to accept your recommendation of the 4.866, would this allow for completion of the project? I mean, would the project be jeopardized by not taking the full amount?
It will allow the project to proceed. There is a chance that there'll be future cost increases, and the department would have to come back again with another request, and maybe, Rich, you want to add to that?
Yes, Commissioner Bergerson. After a lot of consultation with our construction managers, both on-site in Santa Cruz at the project and at headquarters, we really feel it's the prudent thing to do to restore to the full 5%. Given that we're only 35% complete with the project, and as Director Dondero pointed out, we are through with most of the underground work. We don't expect a lot more things like we found so far, but We think it's prudent to restore to the 5% and give those restore the contingencies so our construction managers can manage the project. And it's my expectation that I won't be back before this commission for additional funding.
Well, in the event that the lower figures were approved and it was found, I mean, sometimes you can rise to whatever you have to work with. And it perhaps might squeeze some of the expenditures more realistically. You could come before the commission at that time. I mean, I think that would be better understood than coming to the commission after we've approved, say, the 5%. But, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we accept the recommendation of the Regional Transportation Commission at the 4.4866.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I would just indicate, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Bergeson, if we come back, I hope there will be some consideration for the fact that we recommended a larger amount.
Duly noted.
Commissioners,
the third
before we move on to
real tough
can we, for record-keeping purposes, what dollar value did you approve?
Yeah, 4.2, option B.
Option B.
Is that right, Marion?
It would be $4,866,000.
Okay, we're moving on to item 64.
Item 64 is an allocation for supplemental funds for previously voted projects. The department is requesting supplemental funds for one shop project in San Bernardino County. The project is located on Route 330 in San Bernardino County near Highland. The project is to construct a concrete rock slope protection wall, rebuild the roadway embankment slopes, and reconstruct the roadway surface to repair storm damage. The current allocation for the project is $8,593,000, and the department is requesting supplemental funds of $3 million, representing an increase of 35% over the current allocation to close out the project. Reasons for the cost increase include an overrun in quantity items due to a design error, differing site conditions, and additional traffic control. Although staff is concerned about the costs of the cost increases, primarily the design errors, given that denial of the supplemental funds request is likely to result in legal action and additional costs to the state, staff recommends approval of the supplemental funds request for project closeout. And Mike Perovich is here from the district to answer any questions.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve.
Second.
Oh, I was hoping to die for a lack of a second.
Any discussion? I have one question, Mike.
Sure.
How much of this increase was due to the quantity bust?
About two-thirds of it.
What happened?
There was more than one mistake made in this, and I'm not proud of any of it, but what happened was, during the design, the earthwork quantities were calculated by a computer program. That computer program throws out sections perpendicular to the radius of whatever line it's made from. And that was what was used in this case was a rock wall at the base of the toe, and that had a very tight radius. It threw those out so that they weren't parallel, and the computer program needed to have a toggle switch to make it make a correction to use the right distance between those. So it used the distance at the bottom that was a shorter distance rather than the distance at the middle that would have been longer. And because of that, the earthwork quantity was underestimated, as was the excavation. Then when we got into the field, these quantities were off to the extent that when the job was bid, there was really not enough money to cover it. Other things developed in the field. Part of the roadway had been removed. We realized we had to remove the whole roadway. It was cracking. We were very concerned that we would lose this whole road, that the whole thing would go down into this stream.
That's a separate issue from the quantity thing, though, right?
It's related. So when those quantities were recalculated in the field and the quantity had become bigger in the field, the error became that we didn't know about became bigger, and this wasn't discovered until the end of the project. It should have been picked up by the construction people as they went along, but the project moved very quickly. We're fighting to get this done before the onset of the new winter, and we did achieve that. But clearly we overran this, and we shouldn't have.
You know, in the private sector, when we bid out jobs like this, we have the contractor, or the bidders in this case, verify our quantities. And so, therefore, they're bidding. They either object to those quantities before they submit their bid, or they verify that your quantities are correct. Do we have that procedure instituted yet at Caltrans?
I don't believe we have that directly instituted. Contractors often do make a determination of the quantities and use that for their own bidding purposes. Sometimes they will call up and call out that the contract is that the quantities are incorrect. Oftentimes we provide them with cross-sections to do that work. I think this job became so complex and there were so many changes in the field that I don't believe the contractor knew what the quantities were, but he knew at the end of the job that something was wrong. And when he challenged us, we went back over the calculations.
He knew before that something was wrong, I assure you.
Because he'd have to order more.
No, he knew that there was a problem, but I don't believe that he knew exactly what the quantities were himself.
You know, if you could take this procedure that I just outlined and have in your contract forms or your bid forms, have the contractors verify your quantities, you're going to save the state a hell of a lot of money because they're either going to agree with you or disagree with you, but you're going to know up front before these jobs are awarded. It's just a very helpful way of controlling your costs. And it works in the private sector, and it should work in the public sector just as well.
But I agree with you, but in many cases in their bidding and the contractor does know in advance and they do challenge them at times. So part of what you're saying happens, but on this particular case it just didn't work.
Mr. Land, do you want to comment on this issue? Because the question was asked specifically, are we implementing this procedure? And I have heard Commissioner Gilmetti make this suggestion in other meetings. Where are we with responding to that suggestion?
Yeah, Rick Land, Chief Engineer for the Department. Commissioner Gilmetti, we haven't yet incorporated this, and I'd like to speak to you more about how you're using this in the private sector. What Commissioner Tavoloni has mentioned and Mr. Perovich has mentioned is very correct in that during the bidding process, the contractors do calculate the quantities and verify exactly what they believe the quantities are going to be, and then they adjust their bids accordingly based on some of their gamesmanship is included in that. So we would want to work together with AGC at coming up with the appropriate language for incorporating this that you're mentioning into our
AGC is probably not the source you want to go to. I think you want to go to people like myself and other home builders that are building lots of these subdivisions. They're going to show you how to control the AGC members who are actually submitting the bids.
No, I understand that. My point is that we continue to work in partnership with the construction industry as we put forth these new specifications, making sure we understand what the ramifications or what the appropriate action to take as we move forward with the new specifications are. So, I'll be talking to you.
Okay. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 64.
No, that was 64. Item 65.
665, excuse me.
Item 65 is the augmentation to the annual right-of-way lump sum allocation. The department is requesting an augmentation to the fiscal year 06-07 lump sum right-of-way capital allocation. They're requesting an augmentation of $33 million to be funded with border infrastructure funds. These are related to the item 53, the discussion with the San Diego 905 project. Capital costs for right-of-way have increased in the San Diego area, and this augmentation is to address the right-of-way costs on that project. Staff recommends approval of the augmentation request.
Move approval.
Second.
I do have one question, and this is stupid. Where does the BIP money come from?
It's the Border Infrastructure Fund. It's a special program.
And it was by legislation?
Safety Lou.
Safety Lou.
Oh, Safety Lou? Okay. All right. Any further discussion?
We talked about $80 million. We're allocating 33. Is that to say that, Bimley, you're coming back for 47?
No, Commissioner Lindsay, I'm not. Bimler Reinhart, Division of Right-of-Way and Land Surveys. As mentioned, the programming amount is for $80 million. For this year, fiscal year 6-7, our needs are 33. I doubt it very much that we will even exceed $50 million. 33 for this year, and then the balance of it, what we need, will be in fiscal year 7-8 allocation as a line item.
This was the issue that came up in the other item, talking about the potential for coming in below that $80 million number.
Okay. Any further discussion? We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 66.
Item 66 is a financial allocation for locally administered STIP rail transit projects. The department is requesting allocations for two locally administered STIP rail transit projects totaling $3,525,000. Project number one is the Berkeley-Oakland-San Leandro Corridor Bus Rapid Transit Project, and the other project is the Monterey Branch Line Improvements. Staff recommends approval of these allocation requests.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Gardino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One item, the Transbay Transit Center Downtown Extension Phase 1 was pulled. Could you?
That was withdrawn.
Could you let us know why that was withdrawn?
insufficient details. And it's we were going to be talking to the Joint Powers Authority about what it is that they need the dollars for and what they can say.
Okay. Thank you. I would go ahead and move approval for the two remaining items.
Second.
Any discussion? I would like to make a comment for the Monterey branch line. This was before us, or we pulled it, I think, on the last agenda. It was for an amount much higher. They went back to the drawing tables and decided that this lower amount is what they need to complete a feasibility study, and I want to congratulate them for taking a hard look at this thing. And once we get those feasibility studies, it's like running a performa. You're going to see if this line really does make sense. So I think this is a smart way to go about looking at these projects, and thank you very much for taking that effort. Any other further discussion?
Yeah, a question about, as we deal with bus lines and that type of stuff, is there any methodology? You know, I continually pound on the railroads of business plans and fare box ratios and that the world should make sense. We don't do that on bus lines. Isn't that something we ought to get the same kind of information?
You know, last 2 years I've been harping on getting some sort of a policy adopted by this commission so that we look at transit, which we know we have to subsidize, and get some policy decisions amongst ourselves. I would suggest we have an upcoming retreat, that this be an item on our retreat for the commission members to discuss. And try to figure that out. Okay. We need a vote, right?
We need a vote.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Item 67.
Item 67, Commissioners, is a request to extend the period of project allocation. The City of Los Angeles is requesting a 12-month extension to the period of project allocation from June 30, 2007 to June 30, 2008 for the Fashion District Streetscape Project. Before the project can be constructed, storm drain systems must be installed at the same location. During the design phase of the project, the City determined that the construction of the storm drains could only occur at night due to the high commercial location of the project. Additional permits are necessary for the night work, and the permit process has taken longer than anticipated. Staff recommends approval of this extension request.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 68.
Item 68, a request to extend the period of contract award for two shop projects. Project number one is on Route 101 in San Francisco, and the department is requesting a 3-month extension due to delays in processing of the FTIP amendment. And project number two is on Route 210 in Los Angeles, and the department is requesting a 3-month extension also due to delays in the FTIP amendment. Staff recommends approval of the extension request.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 69.
Item 69 is a request to extend the period of contract award for one locally administered STIP project on the state highway system. The City of Sunnyvale is requesting a six-month time extension to award the contract. The city pursued additional CMAQ funds for the project, and the modification of funding has extended the federal approval process. Staff recommends approval of the extension request.
So moved.
Second.
I actually have a question, Chairman, if I may.
Mr. Gardino.
Thank you. And perhaps staff can respond to this. What makes us believe that the Federal Highway Administration will act in the next 6 months?
They have already submitted their requests, and they're far enough through the process that they believe that this is a reasonable amount of time.
The only federal action, Commissioner Gardino, left is approval of the E-76, which is the authorization document, and that is typically a fairly pro forma activity. We're running into difficulties, as I've explained to the Commission in the recent past, with the Federal Highway Administration in terms of some of their oversight responsibilities, taking a significantly greater amount of time and spending more review time than we think is necessary. I don't anticipate that approval of an E-76 for a project of this nature will go anywhere near the time frame they're asking for.
Great. Thank you, Director.
Mr. Tavoloni?
No.
Oh, I thought you had your hand up.
No, I was.
if this were an auction, you would have just bought this lovely screen.
That's exactly right.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 70.
Item 70 is a request to extend the contract award for one jointly funded TCRP STIP project. Union City is requesting a six-month time extension to award the contract on the Union City Intermodal Station project. The deadline to award the construction contract is May 31st. The city is scheduled to open bids after the award deadline, and they request a six-month extension in case of any issues with the bid process. Staff recommends approval of this extension request.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 71.
Item 71 is the request to extend the period of project completion. The County of Del Norte is requesting a 20-month time extension for the period of project completion for the Elk Valley Road Reconstruction Project. The county has experienced unforeseen delays in completing the project. Currently, there is a dispute between the county and the contractor regarding the adequacy of the paving job, and the county is withholding the contractor's retention until the disputed item is resolved. The county and the contractor are currently in litigation, and resolution of the litigation may be lengthy. Staff recommends approval of this extension request.
Move it.
Question.
Oh. Mr. Bergerson?
With this extension, is this going to increase the cost? I mean, that's a rather substantial amount of time to...
No, actually, in this case, the county is actually seeking some relief from the contractor. They have a dispute. They believe the work. They have an issue there, so it should be no cost increase.
Okay.
We have a motion.
So move.
We had one. I need a second, right?
Second.
I'll second.
I have one question. I'm a little nervous. This says the length of time of the litigation is unpredictable. They're asking for 20 months. I'm sure it's in civil court. What if it doesn't get settled in 20 months? They're only entitled to one 20-month extension.
That's the maximum extension.
So where do we go if the litigation is not settled?
I'm Tina McClendon from Del Norte County. We have a very small county, so litigation tends to move a little more quickly than the bigger areas. And our project is complete. The issue is over the quality of some of the asphalt in a couple areas. And we do have the retention. We also have some liquidated damages. So
this is just basically a closeout we're talking about.
Correct. We just can't complete our final documents.
Okay. Who's the contractor?
Tidewater.
Aren't they bonded to pay for that?
They are bonded. And we are in negotiations right now.
Yeah. But it's disputed.
It's disputed. That's why it's
important. It won't go to the bonding company right now.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item 72.
Yes, Commissioners, item 72 is an appearance for a resolution of necessity. I would request that the Chair inquire if Union Pacific or a representative of Union Pacific is in the audience.
Is anyone from Union Pacific in the audience? Seeing none?
Seeing none, staff would recommend that you approve the resolution of necessity.
So move it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 73. Stephen.
Item 73 is a report on the activities of the Tollbridge Program Oversight Committee. The Oversight Committee is dealing with the subject matter of closing down the Bay Bridge during Labor Day weekend. The committee has approved Caltrans going forward with the close down of a bridge to do some tie-in work on the Yerba Buena Island. There's still a question of will it be a four-day closure or a three-day closure that's going to be still wrestled out, and the committee will be making a decision probably on May 1st as far as that goes. I can also report that Tony Anziano, the department's program manager for the toll program, and I went to China, to Shanghai, visited the manufacturing facility in China where they'll be producing, they'll be cutting and welding the steel for the SAA structure. I do came back with my recommendation to everybody is that there be a very large ownership presence on the ground in China, in Shanghai, to be checking and making sure that we get the quality product that we need to have a bridge that will stand up for 150 years and more. Without a strong presence there, I don't know what we will be getting in the end. So my recommendation is that there be a very strong presence, that the Department of Finance and the Governor's Office approved the Department's request for staff to be on the ground in China. It's vitally critical. The manufacturing facility there is gigantic, I would say ginormous. They have 40,000 people employed there. And when they throw the resources at this thing, they will be going like gangbusters. And if we don't have people in there to be answering questions and resolving problems immediately, things will be coming to a grinding halt, and we'll have 7,000 welders sitting on their hands instead of producing.
Stephen, what role does the commission play on both of these issues? Let's start with the bridge closure. What role are we playing, if any?
The commission really doesn't play a role, but your executive director plays a role because your executive director is part of the oversight committee, and he is a voting member of the oversight committee. On the second issue, as far as the people in China, I think commissioners can play a role by calling up the governor's office and saying, hey, you know, the department's making these requests for these people. I think you should do it.
Okay. Commissioner Bergeson?
Just a question on the closure. Are there sufficient alternatives for the motoring public to accommodate that?
The motoring public would have to use other bridges in the Bay Area to get around. There will be BART service will be provided 24 hours a day. Usually BART shuts down at night. Ferry service will be enhanced. But the real major message to the public is we want to get out as early as possible to tell them, don't plan on going to San Francisco over that weekend. Stay away.
Question, I think this was done last year, correct?
Yes, when we were doing the approach structures in San Francisco, the bridge was shut down, but only in the eastbound direction, and the westbound direction was still open. The difference now is we're going to be shutting it down westbound and eastbound.
But how did it work last year?
It worked very well. The message got out, and people stayed away.
So the hotel and restaurant people really hate you, probably.
They hate it.
Slow weekend.
But, yeah.
But the issue this year, not only is it going to be closed in both directions, the issue is, does it need to be a three-day closure or a four-day? And whatever we decide, we have to make an announcement. The three-day closure wasn't as penal because it was really Saturday, Sunday, Monday. But if this thing turns out to be a four-day closure, you're going to hit a work day. I mean, it's either going to be Tuesday or Friday, and that's problematic. That could be a real issue.
Do we have an option for permanent closure?
There's always that option, I guess.
If we don't fix the bridge and we have an earthquake, there might be a permanent closure.
Mr. Chalker?
$3 billion to all you guys in the audience. I mean, what do you think?
Stephen, I wholeheartedly endorse the proposal to have somebody on the ground in China. Do you have any parameters, or was in this proposal how many people, what time length, cost on doing this?
I think the department has a outline of how many people and how much it's going to cost. I think it's in the neighborhood of $3 million or so.
$2.8 million.
And how many people?
30.
It's as I recall, it's about 30 people.
Yeah.
And they will
30. I mean, and that includes, that's not permanent in China. There would be, we would have an adequate presence permanently located in, located in China throughout the fabrication period. And then we would have inspectors that would be shuttling back and forth. So it's a sizable presence, and certainly I think the Toll Bridge Program Oversight Committee would appreciate the Commission's support of the level of attention to the fabrication process. I haven't been on site as Stephen has, but it is, from what I understand, an amazing process to watch ZPMC, which is the fabrication company in China, and their progress towards building this massive fabrication plant to accommodate the requirements of the work. Stephen just hit the nail on the head with respect to having the adequate presence and having not only the number of people, but having people who are authorized to make decisions on the spot, so that I think Stephen described it last night as having to email back to Oakland to get the direction. So we would appreciate that support. I think I could speak as chair of the Program Oversight Committee. I could speak unanimously for our membership that we would welcome the Commission's help in this.
Let me suggest this. I will follow up with the Executive Committee and will lay out a strategy for communicating to the Governor's office in particular. The frustration is that trying to explain the project to the Department of Finance and why this is justified is running into a significant challenge. frankly, the best thing to do would be to take the Department of Finance and drop them in China and say, figure it out. And then they'll come back and approve it. But, I mean, it's... that's a humorous way to deal with it, but we do need a lobbying effort to underscore how important the request is and that we have to think differently. And this, you know, we just can't get mired in bureaucracy. We run the risk at this juncture on this project of having self-inflicted wounds, which will delay the project and increase the cost. And it's because of the bureaucracy and the inattention and the inability of some folks in the administration to grasp the sense of urgency.
I will say in the latest discussions with the Department of Finance, I think we may have convinced them that this is appropriate. We will shortly know in the May revise. So the communication from the Commission would be timely, I think.
I can't believe that they would even think about going against something with the repercussion that you would have if they didn't go along with it. I think that we need to, as commissioners, agree to this and move this on.
Commissioner Trocker, would it be appropriate to make a motion to direct staff to draft a letter in support of this proposal forward to the governor's office?
As an information, we'll just go ahead and do it.
Okay, thank you.
Question, will the contractor also be sending representatives out there?
Oh,
yes.
Yes, the contractor has a presence on site there, too, because he's responsible for quality, for the quality of the product itself. We're responsible for the assurance.
And as I understand it, it's already in the mill, you know, where the folks are going to stay, and everything is moving on it.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Stephen, very much. Let's move on to item 74, Caltrans Pavement Initiative. Mike?
Chairman Gimletti and Commissioners, Mike Miles, Caltrans Deputy Director for Maintenance and Operations. A little bit of background on the pavement asset management strategies. In 1998, the department presented the first 10-year SHOP, and in that SHOP, we anticipated our distressed pavement in the 9899 and 99-2000 to 11,831 lane miles, and we reduced that down to 10,421. Unfortunately, we weren't able to sustain the funding to maintain that level of to maintain that level of reduction in distressed lane miles. And so the system consists of 51,000 lane miles, which is shown on the map, and we have currently 13,845 lane miles need rehabilitation in the 6-7 fiscal year. In December 2006, the 10-year SHOP was presented to the commission, and while an investment level of $2.025 billion per year would needed to be to reduce the distressed lane miles to 20%, we only have a funding level of $700 million approximately. So we've come up with some strategies that we want to present today on what we plan on doing to help reduce our distressed lane miles. I think one of the keys that we need to emphasize is that we need a sustainable level of funding in order to get to the curve that we're showing on this chart. Our first strategy would be to maintain 80% of our pavement in fair to good condition by focusing investments on improving the condition of pavement rather than project-related items to the extent possible. We want to reduce rehabilitation needs on highways with the highest average daily miles of traffic traveled, and we would focus on Class 1 highways, which are interstate, goods movement, truck, and strategic highway network, and we want to reduce that from 24% down to 12% by the year 2017-18. We want to maintain our rehabilitation needs on Class 2 highways, the remainder of the national highway system and interregional roads, at 28%, and then focus pavement maintenance dollars on Class 3 highways and non-designated and low-volume roads to maintain 68% of the Class 3 highway system in fair to good condition, and then aggressively repair unforeseen pavement damage due to weather or abrupt failures. Strategy 2 would be to balance our investment between highly distressed pavement and more cost-effective preventive maintenance treatments. Clearly, the best way to get the most for your dollar is to spend it in before you need rehab, to spend it on preventive maintenance treatments, because they're much more cost-effective to do than full rehabilitations. And then increase our rehabilitation design life to 20 years or more, and we would do that by using new technologies and implementing different strategies on the types of pavement we do. One example would be dial bar retrofit or full concrete or steel mats in our slabs to try to extend the life. And then reevaluate currently programmed projects in the last 2 years of the 2006 SHOP to ensure compliance with strategies and rescope them if necessary to include the more pavement-focused and look at some of the other items that are in those projects and remove them if possible. And then conduct a life cycle cost analysis on all pavement projects to ensure the most effective project is considered at the lowest long-term cost. And again, that goes back to our long-life pavement strategies. The incremental cost to go to long life, is it actually a savings, and would it be beneficial to do that on each of these projects? So we have to evaluate that in the design phase. And then we're appointing a state pavement program manager who will be accountable for implementing and reporting on the performance of the pavement assets management strategies. And finally, our last strategy would be explore opportunities to use Garvey bonds to accelerate the delivery of major pavement rehabilitation projects. And that would be, we would look at the cost effectiveness of the Garvey bonding. And the Garvey bonding would be a one-time funding source, and it wouldn't be sustainable. And then we would have a cost of bond service on paying off those bonds over the long term, so we have to be very careful on the projects we pick and make sure that they're going to last the life of the bond and make sure it's cost-effective to do that. And then on our chart, if you look at the top graph, if we just put the $700 million that we are currently allocating in, our distressed pavement will go to 7,700 and I think that's 10, I can't quite read it, 10 miles. With the infusion of the $400 million from the B1B bond or the Prop 1B bonds, the curve would drop down in the early years, but it would essentially end up at the same point, a little bit less, but it would be 17,479 lane miles of distress. So the actual funding and performance effect of the B1 would be to lower the curve down a little bit, but it would end up at the same place. And then the other thing is rehabilitation needs will continue to increase to approximately 34% of the system with the $700 million planned in the draft 2007 shop plan and $206 million in major maintenance funding. So what we're recommending are three different options. Option one would be a funding level of $1.4 billion per year is needed to maintain it at its current level and not bring anything new in. Option two would be $1.45 billion per year needed to reduce rehabilitation needs to 80% of the system being good. And then the third option is $2.25 billion per year is needed to reduce the need down to 90% of our system being in good condition. We, as a prudent measure, would recommend option number two because we feel that that would be realistic. And we've looked at what that would do to the remainder of the shop if we were to take that out of the existing shop and not as additional funding. And essentially it would diminish all of the programs to, and some of them would be non-existent at that point if we were to take the money strictly out of the shop. So I'll answer any questions.
Mr. Gardino.
Thank you, Chairman Gilmetti. My colleagues probably know the answer to the first question I'm going to pose, but it'll certainly help me and perhaps at least some people in the audience. And then my second question. I'll go from there. The first one is on strategy one, where you define where you mentioned fair or good. Could you define fair or good?
Fair or good pavement?
Yeah.
We actually have some pictures we could show you, but fair pavement would be alligator cracking or slab curl on concrete. It's still not totally distressed to a point of turning to rubble, but it's getting there in a fair condition. Good condition is a quiet ride and not much structural distress.
Is there something higher than good?
Excellent.
Okay. I would concur, but
is there that in California is a better question.
Agreed. It's, only in El Centro in front of your office, and that's it. My second question is on option one, or all the options, mentioning that 32% is for support costs. Why does it take one of every $3 for support costs, and could you define support costs?
I will refer that to the capital program, Rick.
Well, I'll answer that. Support costs are the engineering costs associated with the development of a project. So it includes the preliminary engineering, it includes the environmental, if that's appropriate, it includes the design, and it includes the construction management. Good. So it's the total spectrum of engineering support to complete a project. We were running at about 38% of project costs. We have reduced that over the past 2 years to 32%. I would like to see that go lower, and we'll work to become more efficient to accomplish that. Major rehab jobs, sometimes given their cost relative to the same level of engineering work that is necessary for them, sometimes run substantially higher than that 32%. But on average, that's what we are spending to deliver our project work from the twinkle in the planner's eye all the way through construction.
My compliments to you for taking it from an average of 38% to 32%. You mentioned you have even more ambitious goals. Can you share with us what those goals might be?
Well, we'll see how. First of all, we have to make sure we achieve our current objectives. But to the extent that we can eliminate, for example, projects that sit on the shelf that have to be re-engineered for a variety of reasons, or where we have to do additional environmental work because the project has gone stale, as we become more efficient with the program, we'll be able to lower those costs because that all adds to the overall dollars that you're having to pay for a single project. So we're monitoring this. This is one of our key performance objectives, as we are successful, we will continue to press even greater efficiency to bring that number down. Just to give you a case in point, the Measure A program in Santa Clara County between 1985 and 1992 was delivered at 26% of the costs. So there's a target to shoot for. And I'm not suggesting there were a lot of innovative items that were taken advantage of, and we will look to implement innovation wherever we can. But that's kind of a good goal.
Maybe we should hire that guy who ran that program.
Yeah. He's getting old and tired.
Is there an industry standard?
Yes, there is. The ASCE provides for industry, and that's American Society of Civil Engineers, does provide industry standards, but they're in a range. We're within that range.
What's the range?
And Rick, help me out. It's 25 to 35%, 36%, something like that. We can get that information for you.
You know, the number used on Measure A, which I congratulate you and Carl for working on, and those were all new projects, basically. It seems to me that this number ought to be a lot lower when we're talking about road rehab in...
Well, let me tell you one thing that we did in the original Measure A program, which we don't do at Caltrans very effectively, and we're getting on this, and that is closing out projects.
Yeah.
We concentrate on delivery to beat the band, and we focus really on the single year of delivery, which you see reflected in the contracts for delivery. And when you focus on something, when you measure something, you do well. Thanks to your input and advice and guidance to us, we're expanding the scope of that of those performance criteria to include the preliminary engineering, as well as now award and open to traffic. We also want to add contract closing as a metric because that once that project is closed, you no longer charge to it. And so there's just a continuous, if you leave that contract open for a variety of reasons, you continue to get charges, and that ups that that cost that we're talking about.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes, sir.
From anyone? Commissioner Ferguson?
Just a quick question. There's a lot of research being conducted now as far as alternative materials for use. Is there a connection? I mean, are you working with some of these new efforts, I think, to bring more cost-effective materials?
I think the one suggestion that Mr. Miles has made relative to the appointment of a pavement engineer is going to be very helpful in that regard. Because we have a process that is cumbersome, to put it mildly, in terms of reviewing new ways of doing business. And I think there's some reasons for us taking the time that we do to test things out, make sure they're effective and all of that. But I would like to see us move much more quickly and be much more proactive in terms of considering these newer concepts. And I think the pavement engineer that we're talking about will sort of consolidate all of this in a single sort of one-stop shop. The industry is very supportive of the appointment of a pavement specialist within Caltrans, and we're moving quickly to do that.
I just had one final comment. To me, accepting option two is just not good enough. I mean, I just can't stand to see our pavement be 20%, you know, down the toilet, so to speak. And I'd really encourage the department to go on with option three. And really, I mean, that ought to be our goal. We've got to get there. We just got to get there.
Go ahead. Well, I'm sorry, Mike. If you had a response, go ahead.
No.
I'm just going to say that obviously should be our goal. And that is why we got included, and I consider this a real coup. People haven't really noticed it, but we got language included in this year's budget that recognizes for the first time that we have a serious problem here, not just on our state highway system, but on our local streets and roads and in our transit systems. And so we need, the commission has been involved in Prop 1B implementation, but at some appropriate time, we all need to bring the parties together so that we can get our arms around the size of the problem and begin to develop strategies and options for addressing it. And you are absolutely right. We should not be settling for 20% distressed pavement in this state. Yep. 10% is a much more realistic, effective, maybe not realistic, but effective goal from the standpoint of what we should be providing for the motorists in this state.
I can support this report if you change it to option three.
Commissioner Gilmetti, if I could point out one thing, at all of these levels right now, the shop runs the capital side of it runs at $1.8 billion, and that basically takes in all of the money from the state highway account. At $1.1 billion or $1.4 billion, you're cannibalizing other pieces of the SHOP program. At $2 billion, there just isn't that money.
Stephen, I realize that, but if we don't have a goal that really puts the system where it needs to be, then we're failing the state. And if we have to go across the street and pound on the legislature to get it done, they have to realize what's going on. They're going to pay a hell of a lot more later to fix this stuff. And the feds have a role in this, too. You know, they invested over 50 years, they invested a hell of a lot of money in the state interstate system, and they're doing nothing about putting money back to protect the investment that they paid for. And so that goes with another conversation that we're probably going to have with some folks in Washington about that subject.
And that was just the one thing I wanted to emphasize, is that we need a stable funding source, and the current need is $4.1 billion. We have $1.9 of that $700 million is pavement, so if you take from the other programs to go to the $2.05 billion, you would have no other SHOP at all, because it would completely take it all.
I realize that, but...
Mr. Chairman, let me just say, I can support what you're saying. I think that what we ought to do is somehow characterize this in terms of our goal as being a system that only encompasses...
That's what a goal means to us. We may not have the money to do it, but the goal ought to be there.
Our interim strategy, right, however, would have to probably... And we are stretching it, as Mike has just indicated, in terms of the funds that are available. But if we could talk about the goal being the 10%, I agree that that is a much more significant target to shoot for, and one that will provide greater benefits to the state if we can identify option two as the interim strategy to get there.
Commissioner Chalker.
I would ask Director Kempton, if someone could perform an analysis to determine, supposing we made this a very high priority objective for a two-year period, understanding that we would have to sacrifice some other components in the SHOP to do it. But what would be the gain over a five-year period of time or a 10-year period of time if we were to sacrifice or lower the priority on some other categories in the SHOP and concentrate on this one by some X amount of money or some percentage weighting change? Because right now you're putting the SHOP together and you've got a certain percentage of that SHOP going to pavement rehabilitation. Let's say it's 40%. What would be the outcome if we increased it to 60 or 70% for a two-year period? How does that affect this chart going forward in terms of lane miles that need rehabilitation and pavement? And what are we sacrificing or putting off for a two-year period as a lower priority? I think that could be a worthwhile analysis. Is the gain more than the loss over time in terms of the additional preventive maintenance that we're doing, but the repair that we're not having to do in the future?
But aren't we all in? Isn't that what we talked about this morning?
No. This does relate to that in some degree in the fund estimate, but that's a fund estimate we have to put together by statute. Internally, I think I've asked, and some of us have asked, that we have other numbers on that fund estimate making other assumptions, so we try and identify what the gap is overall in revenue to meet all of our requirements. And once we know that gap, you can then start to think about, well, where might I go to other revenue sources to fill that gap, because you know how much you need. You know, I mean, you can't start to fill a gap and talk about new revenue sources if you don't know how much money you're really trying to target to generate out of a new revenue source. So you got to work backwards back into it.
But why don't we just extrapolate what today's dollar value is worth over time in this marketplace?
Well, that may work fine for expenses, but it doesn't work fine for revenue, and that's one of the reasons why I passed out this article. The paradigm that we're operating under and the assumptions we're operating now and in the past, on which we have to follow as we, per the statute, as we draft the fund estimate, are going to change. I mean, if you reduce the number of gallons of gasoline that are going to be consumed because everybody's buying a hybrid that gets 40 miles per gallon, you're going to lose sales tax revenue that comes into transportation. I mean, that's just that simple. And in the meantime, your expenses are still going to be going up every year for the very reasons you just outlined. So, you know, we have to think about internally some of our own draft estimates besides doing the ones that are required by statute if we're going to be effective in trying to come up with a overall revenue system that will meet the needs that we're going to have looking out 5 or 10 years. In 10 years, this revenue system is not going to sustain us, and it's already failing right now, and we can see that.
Commissioner Bergeson?
Yeah, this discussion, I think, has been going on for some time, and I think, you know, the only solution, obviously, is going to be some dedicated funding source expressly for this purpose. And as I understood, the governor was going to be organizing a task force for that particular reason and studying how we can effectively cover the costs of whatever it's going to be. But I think, you know, what's being proposed now is just to take money from some other source. I mean, you have to take from something else in order to gain the need that's, for rehabilitation purposes. But I think we should really concentrate on getting some action that gives us an assurance that we have a dedicated revenue source that's going to be ongoing, and we have some assurance that those dollars are going to be there.
Well, the reason we're starting to have this conversation and the reason we've been spending a fair amount of time talking about the 10-year shop is to get to Commissioner Chalker's point that in a constrained revenue environment, we have to focus. And I think that in addition to trying to find dedicated revenue sources, the department needs to perform differently. I mean, it may be that with $1.8 billion that there are going to be some shop things we don't do. And it may be that the department has to focus maybe in urban areas or non-urban or whatever. And I think the assumption has sort of been that the shop is kind of like, you know, percolates on its own and life is good and it's just underfunded. I think there's more to it than that. I think Will was getting to it. You know, going from 32 to 28% means you're getting more efficient, for example, and plowing the 4% back into the program. Those are the things that we need to be working on now so that when there is revenue, we can purchase that much more activity. And so this is why we're starting to talk about it, and this is why we're in conversations with Mike and some other folks, and we're trying to look at ways to mix and match and not only get at this objective but other objectives. And it comes because we do have to do things differently. And I think performance, this is all tied to this notion of outcomes and performance. And we've not done, I think, as good a job in the shop area as we are about to, honing in on performance and asking tough questions about are we, in fact, getting as much shop activity as we could.
Okay. Great discussion. Thank you, Mike. Let's move on to our last item, Caltrans 5-year capital plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Item number 75 is the draft fiscal year 2008-2009 5-year capital facilities plan that's been prepared by the department in response to statute that requires that the department bring to the Department of Finance a 5-year capital outlay plan for office facilities. This is an overlapping responsibility. The commission, as part of the 4-year shop process and part of the 10-year shop process, ends up looking at these projects and approving them. The office facilities themselves are then brought out of the shop plan and the program to the Department of Finance for their review and for their final approval. What can happen during that process if the Department of Finance does not agree with the proposal or makes changes to the proposal, those projects could be easily delayed for 2 years. With that, I'll turn it over to the department for their presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Yee. I'm the chief for the Division of Business Facilities and Security. In front of me is my office chief for resource management. He's really my admin budget officer. Anyway, my goal today basically is to educate the new commissioners as well as refresh the existing commissioners on the purpose as well as the process of the infrastructure plan. So that being said, this is divided into three areas, the facility infrastructure plan defined, the process, and a brief overview of the plan itself.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Ota from Caltrans. The facilities infrastructure plan is prepared annually. It's a five-year plan that represents the department's proposed facility projects. Facilities include office buildings, equipment shops, maintenance facilities, transportation management centers, and materials labs. The plan itself fulfills the requirement to annually submit to the Department of Finance a five-year plan for office building, proposed office building projects that is incorporated in the state of California's five-year capital outlay infrastructure plan. The plan also reflects facilities projects that are programmed in the 2006 shop or in the shop, as well as proposed projects to meet facility needs in the 10-year shop plan. The following slide shows the relationship of the facilities infrastructure plan with the four-year shop and the 10-year shop. The 2006 shop covers fiscal years 6-7 through 2009-10. The 2007-10-year shop covers the period 2008-09 through 2017-18. And the 2008 facilities infrastructure plan that we're presenting today is a five-year plan that covers fiscal years 2008-09 through 2011-12. The facilities infrastructure plan includes program projects that are in the last 2 years of the 2006 shop, as well as 3 years of proposed projects to meet needs in the 10-year shop.
That all being said, the facility infrastructure plan consists of four chapters and an executive summary, and we're briefly going to describe each of these chapters.
This is the executive summary. This chart summarizes the costs for the projects in the 2008 facilities infrastructure plan. The plan itself includes $214 million in construction costs over the five-year period. In addition to this, there's an estimated $20.9 million for land acquisition required for these projects, and we're estimating $72.9 million of capital outlay support costs to complete these projects. The capital outlay support estimate is based on the 32% ratio to capital that we just talked about a few minutes ago. So the total investment over this five-year period on facilities is $308 million. This next chart puts into context that $308 million. It compares the construction costs in the facilities infrastructure plan with the 2007-10-year shop. In the previous slide, we showed that the 2008 facilities infrastructure plan is actually the first 5 years, coincides with the first 5 years of the 10-year plan. In total, the annual average construction costs in this plan are fairly consistent with the annual average in the 10-year shop. The main differences are that equipment shop projects are front-loaded in the 10-year shop, so the annual equipment shop investment in this time is $12.9 million compared to the $4.8 million. Also, office facility projects are pushed back into the last 5 years of the 10-year facilities, 2007 10-year shop.
In our Chapter 2, we describe basically only one project that we placed in this five-year plan. Basically, it's District 1 Eureka. It's a 50-year-old building just recently retrofitted for seismic. It's at a cost of close to $7.5 million to modernize this building. What I mean by modernize, I mean addressing fire life safety priorities 1 and 2 improvements, as well as creating new heating and ventilation system. The $7.5 million is an estimate by Department of General Services, and we will get a more definitive estimate once the facility study or economic analysis is done. Chapter 3, in a nutshell, is our transportation-related facilities, meaning it's the equipment shop, maintenance facilities, material labs, as well as the TMCs. As Mike presented before, the grand total of all these facilities in this plan is at $300.5 million. In our chapter 4, we talk about resource conservation. The Executive Order S20-04 was signed by the governor back in December 2004. The whole purpose of this exact order is to reduce our grid produce electricity by 20% in 2015. So how is the department going to attain this reduction in energy? First of all, we're going to, in essence, whenever we do any retrofits and or built new buildings, they're going to be certified LEED Silver. Secondly, we're also looking at single energy contractors to conduct energy audits to our existing buildings, as well as install energy savings equipment to that. Also, the department is also a member of the California Climate Action Register, which basically establishes greenhouse gas emission baselines, and we also encourage energy efficiencies and decreases of that energy gas emissions. Four, which I'm kind of excited about, is that we're piloting a project in regards to computer savings on utilizing an energy software. We're doing that in our Marysville office in District 3. It is showing that we may save anywhere between 100 to 300 kilowatt hours annually per computer. And the neat thing about this, the software that we're utilizing is about $25 a computer, and by some rebates that we get by different energy companies, reduces it down to about $10 per software. The last thing that we're going to do, which I'm very excited, is that it's called the Clean Renewable Energy Bonds. About a year ago, the federal government issued out interest-free bonds. We applied for those bonds. We're the only state department that applied for these bonds. We got from the IRS $45.6 million for 93 photovoltaic projects. We are now working with the Department of General Services as well as the Department of Finance to implement this program. We're required by December 2008 to issue these bonds, and by December 2011 is actually to construct these photovoltaics on our state-owned facilities. And this is basically a listing of those 93 projects amounting to $45.6 million. Well, that concludes my presentation. I know everybody's probably pretty hungry and don't want to ask me any questions.
Any comments? Commissioner Gardino?
Mr. Chairman, very briefly. First, you're right. You two are the only thing standing between us and lunch. So
you've been eating cookies all morning. Guy's not hungry. That's why he's asking you a question.
Actually, those were my only three cookies. I finally caved. But I appreciate that you're looking out for my best interest. I just want to commend Director Kempton and the department. There is such a strong business case for energy efficiency. We save a lot of money that we can use in other ways out on our roads and transit systems and save energy at the same time. So kudos for seeking those grants and for implementing those steps. If there's anything that we can do in terms of my day hat, too, on the business case for energy efficiency, using technology or just good business sense or operations, please let me know.
Well, Commissioner Gardino, as you well know, kudos go to the governor, who is driving this throughout state government.
Agreed.
I mean, this is really his vision, his objective, and we're just, implementing his direction. So I appreciate the comments, but I think the real credit goes to Governor Schwarzenegger.
Agreed.
Commission staff has a question regarding the resource conservation. And the document identifies there are at least 8 buildings that are 50 years or older. How much of resource conservation can we get if we replace those buildings?
I'm not quite understanding your question, Robert.
Well, you've got these old buildings that are 50 years plus.
Yes.
Based on what you have here in your document, you're pushing them back to the end of the 10-year shop. So when they finally come online, we're talking maybe 60-year-old buildings that are being replaced. If there's some analysis been done to show how much of a savings we can get in terms of energy by replacing those buildings earlier?
Right now, we're directed to do a baseline on those buildings. So to answer your question, I can't answer that right now in regards to what the savings will be. But like I said, the first thing that we're going to be doing is to do an energy audit of all our these older buildings and determine what is the best cost effective in order to either retrofit it for cost energy savings. When I said that we're looking at a single contractor, what we're thinking about doing is the contractor would, in essence, do the audit and also place in these cost-efficient items into it. And so, therefore, he would charge us over a 15-20-year span, and we would pay that through the energy savings that we would gain by year. So in essence, it'd be a no cost to the state, in essence, or basically it's a cost to the state, but it's pushed out in regards to just, you know, basically savings from our energy savings that we're paying for.
Robert, are you talking about primarily our district office buildings? Is that what you're...
I'm looking at what your report says. There are a number of office buildings that are out throughout the state that are your office facilities as well as headquarters.
Right. And I think, in a nutshell, what Glenn is saying is that the energy audits that are underway will tell us, you know, what's the most cost-effective way of dealing... or cost-effective strategy to implement in dealing with those buildings. But I will tell you, we just, based on the previous discussion, this is a shop-funded activity. And when I came, there were a lot of district office buildings spread out over this 10-year period to begin work on replacing. And it was my judgment that given the transportation needs that we have across the state, including the severe shop needs, that we could defer new buildings in favor of putting those dollars into pavement. Certainly, if energy audits show that is not a prudent decision, we'll make adjustments accordingly. But I just wanted to make sure you understood that was
so,
my strategy.
So we don't have new carpet because we're funding a guardrail?
We figure that we can probably pay for the repaving of Interstate 80 between Colfax and Truckee with what you want for your suite, Mr. Barna.
He's brutal.
You heard that.
Allocate what?
Any other discussions? One comment, Glenn.
Yes.
In one of your summary pages here, it talks about the amount of office space owned and amount of office space leased, and it's about two-thirds owned, one-third leased. Are we moving in that direction to lease more so that we don't have these capital expenses and we're just paying on a monthly basis?
At this point in time, we are not. I mean, we haven't been growing. The thing I could say is that we'll probably be reducing our lease space, especially in our District 12. When we start going into a soft term, we'll start downsizing that office space.
But in Reading, you had a situation, was it Reading or Eureka? I guess it was Eureka, where you've got $7.4 million that
yes.
you're proposing to build a new space. Wouldn't we be better off having someone build it and lease it from them?
It's not building a new space. It's really just retrofitting their existing space. It's pretty expensive to... Well, first of all, you can't find that much lease space in Reading. I mean, it's about, I think, 80,000 square feet in Reading, so there's no lease, there's no building of
well,
that.
I bet you could find an investor who'd build you that one.
Commissioner Gilmetti, I think the point that we'd like to stress is that while we're not looking to add lease space, we're not expanding either. If it becomes a choice of new space versus lease space, I agree with you, and I think we ought to be looking for lease space
okay.
as opposed to you know, adding to our current inventory. But
okay.
we're not expanding.
All right. Anything else from anyone? Thank you very much. Great presentation.
Thank you.
That includes our listed items. I have two requests here for public comment. The first one is Eric Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening from Atascadero, and I'd like to again welcome you to our beautiful Central Coast and thank Director Kempton for responding to my question yesterday. Today, I'd like to share my concern with two trends in transportation funding that I believe are moving us in the wrong direction. One is the move from user fees that correlate to vehicle use to funding sources that don't. Gas tax is shrinking when inflation is taken into account and shrinking even more as a proportion of the price of fuel due to the lack of indexing. Vehicle license fees were cut while local sales taxes, developer fees, and bonds repaid from the general fund struggled to make up the difference. By moving away from vehicle-based user fees, we remove incentives for modal shift at a time when climate change adds its own urgency to pollution and congestion as ills that only modal shift can conclusively address. The other disturbing trend is the shift from pay-as-you-go funding to incurring debt. The money made available through Prop 1B must be repaid with interest over the next 30 years, a senior obligation on every state budget that will affect operations, including transportation. We already see a symptom of this in the governor's proposed raid of STA funds to budget next year's budget at the expense of public transit, which we should be funding ever more generously. Proposition 1B's 19-plus billion could have been provided debt-free in 5 years had we only kept the vehicle license fee at its historic 2% level, and multi-billions more each year could continue to flow into the coffers. VLF is paid by drivers. Proposition 1B is paid for by today's children who have been indentured to the bondholders for the next 30 years. Which choice represents the responsible way to pay for transportation needs? Please don't advocate for any more bonds until you have done all you can to persuade the governor, the legislature, and the electorate of the need to take responsibility and pay as we go. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, our next speaker is Zach Scrivener.
Good afternoon. My name is Zach Scrivener. I'm the district director for Assemblymember Gene Fuller. I'm also an elected member of the Bakersfield City Council, and I serve as the city's representative on Kern Council of Governments. And it appears that I am the one that has the unenviable position of standing between everyone and lunch, so I will move as quickly as I can. First of all, I'm here to represent Assemblymember Gene Fuller, but also Congressman Kevin McCarthy has asked me to come and address you as well. He has sent a letter that I hope that Mr. Barna received and that all of you also have gotten a chance to look at. But I wanted to just point out a couple of items on there. The first thing that he points out on his letter, this is Congressman McCarthy, is that the Kern Council of Governments unanimously approved the project list which you have from Kern County. So I think that shows the broad level of community support that this project list actually has. And he also represents the San Luis Obispo County area, and so he points out in his letter, the Central Valley and the Central Coast regions continue to be one of the fastest growing regions in California. The passage of Proposition 1B has provided an opportunity to improve our current transportation infrastructure in a timely fashion. I strongly urge that the California Transportation Commission approve the proposed augmentation program of projects for Kern and San Luis Obispo counties. Now, I just wanted to speak very quickly about one of the projects in particular. I know that you saw a presentation yesterday from the Kern County delegation about all the projects that are on the list. I wanted to speak very briefly specifically about the Westside Parkway. The planning for the Westside Parkway has taken place for over 15 years. It would be the first freeway built in the metropolitan area of the city of Bakersfield in over 30 years. It's an 8-mile-long freeway with 4 interchanges. No houses were taken in acquiring the right-of-way for this project, and there is the broad community support that I pointed out once before. I wanted to speak a little bit about the deliverability of this project. This is something that we think is very important to point out to all the commissioners. We have total environmental clearance on this project. Nearly all of the right-of-way has been acquired for the project. The final design of the Westside Parkway is underway. We have a terrific delivery staff that's already in place for the project. Construction can begin in late 2008. That's next year. And there also is potential for phasing of the project, which is what I know the commission spoke to the Kern County representatives yesterday, is about the ability to phase in certain portions of this project. In closing, I want to address one of the concerns that was brought up by the commissioners, and I think that it's definitely a valid concern. That's the fact that Kern County is not a self-help county. Our HAPS and sales tax initiative that we had on the ballot in 2006 did not pass. We only received about 57% of the vote. But what I wanted to stress to you that we already have an effort in place to try for a HAPS and sales tax again on the February 2008 ballot. Just last week, a week ago from today, you had a broad grassroots stakeholders meeting that got together and was discussing, okay, what did we do wrong? What are we going to do right this time in order to get the HAPS and sales tax passed? And this meeting included members of the Chamber of Commerce, the Board of Realtors, the Building Industry Association, AAA, the Kern Taxpayers Association, Kern Council of Governments, and the Kern Economic Development Corporation. So you can see that there is already a team in place of very talented and capable individuals for us to push for this house and sales tax, which I know is definitely a concern for the Commission. Another thing, too, is that the City of Bakersfield has committed over $100 million over the next 10 years for transportation projects. And one last thing I wanted to point out, while Kern County currently isn't a self-help county, we actually feel that we have kind of a non-traditional form of a self-help county in place. And what I mean by that is the mitigation measures that we are now requiring of developers in the metropolitan city of Bakersfield. Not only do we have approximately $6,700 per house in traffic impact fees that we're requiring, but we also have some development agreements that have been negotiated by our city manager with specifically Castle and Cook, which is a large builder. One of the projects that are on Kern County's list is the West Beltway. It's a part of a Beltway project that's going to go around the metropolitan area. And what was negotiated in that development agreement is for the developer actually to give us dedicated right-of-way for the West Beltway that runs through 2 miles of their project, and also to pay the developer to pay for 2 of the 4 miles of this freeway project that runs through their project. And one of the things now that our city manager is asking the city of Bakersfield, our council, to consider is to actually require any project that's within 2 miles of any freeway project, any of those developments will actually go towards paying for any freeway projects, like I said, that are within 2 miles. So I hope that what you see is that we're taking matters into our own hands. We're really, really pushing hard to find ways to augment whatever help the CTC, the state of California, can give the metropolitan area, the city of Bakersfield. And lastly, I'd like to invite all of you to come to the city of Bakersfield to meet with our very talented and capable staff and actually see the types of plans that we have in place to deliver these projects for the community. In closing, I thank you very much for your time, and good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Scrivener. Okay, are there any other comments from the audience or from our staff?
Just one quick comment on the presentation that was just made. I think we all agree that the projects that you have presented and that were presented yesterday are really critically needed projects. The request is so huge, though, I'm just wondering who we would deny funds in order to be able to fully fund you. That's the choice that we're faced with. If we give you everything you want, there's a whole bunch of other folks that aren't going to get what they have coming to them. Not even just dealing with the overrun, but just what they have on their approved list and their minimum funded requirement. So it's a pretty tough choice. You really need to get that sales tax passed.
If I may, excuse me, I understand. I agree with you 100% that we do need to do that, and that's why I emphasize the ability for us to phase this project in pieces, and that's something that you talked to our staff about. And so I know that the commission has directed the CTC staff to meet with the county and Kern Cog and City of Bakersfield staff in order to figure out exactly how they would be able to phase that project. So I would just thank you, first of all, for giving that direction, and also encourage you to make sure that that meeting actually happens. Thank you.
A one-sentence response to that, too. With leaders like Jim Arp in his day job and myself with some experience, I'm sure I'm speaking for Jim as well. If there's anything we can do voluntarily offline to be sounding board for what you're planning to do to take that back successfully to become a self-help county, I'm sure we'd be willing to put in some thought to that.
That's very much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I was pointedly reminded that Executive Director Barna and I were broadly indicted the regional planning agencies for their submittals, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands. That includes also our district offices who need to sharpen their pencils with respect to the information that was submitted, and to also recognize Mr. Gallegos that there were some, and he's not even paying attention at this point, that there were some agencies that did provide fairly good information, and so I just wanted to go on record in recognizing that fact. and mea culpa for including everyone in the shotgun that we used. And then finally, in order for the department to continue to receive project allocations for the rest of this calendar year, I do want to indicate to the Commission that we will very positively consider Mr. Barner's modest request for upgrade to the Commission suite.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I assume these T-shirts are not worth more than $300. We don't have to report these on our Form 700.
I have no idea.
We're not going.
Yeah. I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
We're adjourned.
No.
Well, are we getting together?